Hello, and welcome to a spooktacular episode of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one horrifically big noise. I'm the Vince of Darkness, and joining me this week are Deadly Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the terrifying Tony Esmond.
Hey, yes. Vince of Darkness. I've never heard you say that before. Yeah.
I know. I used to put it as my, you know, every October, everyone sort of changes
that's
their.
That's where I've seen it. Yeah, everyone on Twitter does a thing that I never did.
I didn't do it this year. Maybe I should have. You live with regrets, don't you? Yeah. It's that time of year again, folks. Halloween is just around the corner, so it's time for a Halloween horror special.
Right, it's up on us, isn't it?
Yeah, it has indeed. Yeah. This year has been ultra quick. And we hope you've got your Halloween sweets and candy ready, because we're about to get all horrific.
I just have a bucket of piss by the door that I throw on kids.
Do you have any? Do you have any treats, or is it just?
Bucket of piss. 24/7. Nothing to do with Halloween.
It's got nothing to do with Halloween. He's just always got a bucket of piss.
Postman will get it.
Oh dear! Yes. So this is we're going to talk a bit about horror, and we're not alone to do that, because tonight we're joined by a prolific publisher on the UK indie scene. If you've been to a convention, remember conventions? What a joy they were. But certainly
they're
if you've
not
been to
anymore, they've been cancelled.
No, they'll be back, Tony. Come on, positive. Let's this is a positive show.
Okay.
And if you've been to a convention in the past few years, or will be in the years ahead when they're back on, wherever it may be, then you've definitely seen the table of Hellbound Media. Because they're at pretty much every convention you could possibly imagine. And we're very pleased to be joined this week by the heads of Hellbound itself, Mark Adams and Matt Warner. Hello, gents.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, guys. It's been absolute carnage in the 15 minutes before we press record.
I'm a bit
worried about how this is going to go, I'll be honest with you.
Well, we've used all our A material already.
So you're going to have to wait until the end of the show, because I've got to cut through a lot of outtakes. Some I can use, some I can't.
Christ, please don't use them all. Yeah.
So there will be the end of credits horrific bits to check
out. We missed out last week. People were asking about last week's 9/11 joke that we did, but that didn't make it. It was just too much, wasn't it?
God. Sometimes it's too much. But can there be too much in horror?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we can discuss that on tonight's show.
Yeah, it'll be one of the main,
intro.
Yeah, it'll be one of the many things we'll discuss. And who knows where this talk's going to go. I mean, in some ways, after the talk we've had for about 10 minutes before the show started, I have a feeling I'm going to have nightmares about this show for quite some time. But what never gives me nightmares is our lovely sponsor, Comic House. Yes. And,
Well done.
Thank you. I don't know.
Mark, say the thing.
No, you're not taking this over, Mark.
Oh, fuck off.
He's trying to take my job from me. And that job is to talk about Comic House, because they're the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a huge selection of titles on Comic House. I'm trying to do this really quick just before he jumps in. On the tape base.
You can find the hand grenade titles lands. On Comic House.
You can. Yes. Yeah. So you should definitely check out Comic House to find Hellbound Media. And, you know, lots of other comics like stuff by Dan Butcher, Tony Esmond, and there's a few things by me. And a lot of other guests have been on the app and on Comic House itself. If you self-publish yourself, you can list your book on there for free, start selling straight away. But like I just said, there's an app. It's only £3 a month. It's like Netflix for comics. I'm just going to lean into the cliche now. And for that, which is pretty cheap compared to a lot of digital prices, and I still can't believe it's only £3 a month, you get access to an enormous library of digital E&D comics. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Superhuman 1 or Homecoming. We've got Dragon's Mist, The Indifference Engine Volume 2, The Suicide Show, The Last Sheriff 6, and, drumroll, Atomic Hercules 1.
Hey! That'll give you nightmares.
Yeah, check that one out.
Yeah, that's a bit cockeyed.
Oh dear. Yes, there's lots of fantastic stuff on there. There's a 14-day free trial. If you go to comichouse.com, you can find out more about that, the entire service. And go on, Mark, as you're the guest. Do you want to say something about Comic House? You don't, do you?
Does it have its own equivalent of Netflix and chill?
What does that mean?
You have full sex where you're...
We could think
of Comic House and dry hand job, isn't it?
Yeah. Comic House, spit on your hand and continue.
Please continue to sponsor us.
Yeah.
Please. You know, if you need me to get rid of the others, I'll do it.
Yeah. We did do an amazing comic for Comic House specifically when we're using one of our characters, Mandy the Monster Hunter. Yeah. It went really well. It had a great artist as well. I mean, I don't know what happened to him. Disappeared after that.
But, yeah, he did actually. Yeah. Snuffed out.
I think he's in witness protection, isn't he?
Yeah. What was his name?
It's better to burn bright than to fade away, isn't it, eh?
Yeah.
Although there are some bridges I think you should have burnt there, Vince. How they got on the show, I don't know.
Yeah, but, I know.
You
know. I know. It's part of the contract, dude. I couldn't do anything about it. We're here now. We've just got to live with it, dude.
You know what? I was, as an aside, I was thinking about this week. Now, I think everyone's going to end up reading digitally, aren't they? I mean, the thing is, you've got Comic House, but also, did you see the news about Marvel this week, about how it's moving to a three... Yeah. So Marvel Unlimited is moving to a three-month lag on back issues being put on the app.
What have they got at the moment? Is it 6 months at the moment?
Yeah, 6 months, which is quite a long time, but 3 months, it takes me that long to get round to some of them, to be fair.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's only, what, $8.99 a month? What's that, two comics?
Yeah.
It'll be worth it.
Do you think they're going to push to a lot of digital and then just do collections printed?
Maybe, yeah.
You know, for the like the book lovers, that the people that love the shelf porn and stuff like that. You
yeah,
know?
Like the omnibuses and stuff. Yeah. Well, if you listen to Jerry Conway, he thinks it should all be stripped back and we should have two lines: the kids line and the sort of adult-y...
I mean, I don't disagree with it.
I don't really, man. Yeah. No, I don't really. But I think everyone will start moving there. And I wonder if they're just testing the water to see how much of an uptake they get on it. They know the budget, a bit like Netflix. They know the budget they've got to make comics, and they can, you know, just perform, you know, more within a monetary sort of boundary compared to what they have when they're doing...
Yeah.
Or putting a comic out and, nobody's buying it, you know?
Yeah. And the subscription service is... It's the way that a lot of media is going anyway, isn't it? You know, whether it's your films, it's just everything. You know, being able to just have that, knowing there's that $8.99 a month or $7.99, or and you've got access to all that. Yeah. But you could have like a month. You know, if you want to have a month off, you have a month off. Do you know what I mean? You're not really. It's quite easy.
I mean,
to...
I use it now, and I absolutely love it, man. I get more than my money's worth out of it every month. Yeah.
Do you think at one point as a society, I don't think I'll be around to see that society where the idea of owning something for yours forever is just a foreign concept.
Yeah.
And everything would be... Because that's a dreadful kind of thing. Because imagine there was a book that, like, they saw as subversive and they changed it and everyone's copy changed, or...
Yeah. And which
you know what I mean?
Or,
oh, bloody hell. Yeah, there's a Black Mirror episode, Dan.
Yeah, you're getting that with Doctor Who and stuff. So, you know, they're changing, you know, there's something, yeah.
Well, they've gone back and edited episodes that deemed problematic for whatever reason, but
there's a couple of things.
I'm not saying they are and they aren't, but yeah.
There's a couple of things that sprang to mind this week around it, and the first one was who was that lady who was on Netflix doing a show about decluttering or something? Some lady, she did a show about tidying up. Do you remember the one? You should only have 8 books or something in your house. I'm thinking, well, that's going to be shit during lockdown, isn't it? Because you read them in a week. Yeah. And then the other thing is, I noticed that in Wales, who are, I feel sorry, good luck to everyone in Wales currently, because they're all under this lockdown, aren't they?
I am currently in Wales.
Oh, sorry, man, yeah. They've stopped you buying
could
books.
Could be worse, it could be in England.
They've stopped you buying books in supermarkets and stuff. And I'm thinking, what are you going to do during lockdown? You can't buy a book.
What?
It's a bit mad,
why can't you buy the book?
Well, they're saying you can only buy essential things, and the books are all... cellophaned off and stuff.
I think lockdown has shown us that books and TV shows are essential.
They do seem to be, don't they? Yeah.
And they've literally put cellophane around the Halloween aisles, and they're not going to take the cellophane off until the 9th of November.
Yeah.
Surely there's a problem with that.
Yeah.
I see a problem there. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
This year has been, 2020 has been a bit of a horror show. In a lot of different ways, you know, but we hope you're all happy and healthy wherever you are. And Matt, I mean, I hope you're doing okay where you are. You got plenty of books to read, etc.
I've got lots of books. I've got lots of porn.
Yeah, good.
He's got Comic House.
Lots of toilet paper, which that doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with the porn, but I heard that someone said that he shot his load into his face mask because he couldn't be bothered getting a tissue today, so
Oh my god.
That was Mark. That was Mark.
Was this at work, Matt?
Yeah. It was at the Hellbound Media board meeting that they have.
Yeah. Just me, Mark, and Satan.
You say he said, but you watched it, didn't you? You saw it.
My god.
Well,
where's this going?
I don't know. I'm as scared as you.
It's probably going to go into a Hellbound Media script, I'm guessing.
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
I'd read it.
Yeah. And we might as well just kick off straight into there, you know. Why not? Because who knows what tonight will bring us, folks. Isn't that exciting? You know, it's like Tales from the Crypt. You never know what you're going to get.
Can I just say something very chilling? You know, you said 2020 has been really bad. Spoiler alert, it's not going to end when 2020 ends.
Yeah.
That's just something to think about.
life of the party, Matt Warner there.
Yeah. Now we're all depressed. What next? Yeah.
If you hear a click, that's the.
It's made me cut. That'll right be down the gun. Dating.
Oh. But no, that's why people need comics more than ever.
Need horror. They need really disturbing things to watch when they're stuck indoors and they're worried about what's going on outside.
I mean, the thing is, this is kind of a thing that I found quite interesting is when everything, obviously with this year and the horribleness of the virus, etc., kicked off, there was a real uptake, certainly, and I don't know whether this was what this like is in comics, so, but certainly you went onto your streaming service, there was an uptake in people watching virus-based horror stuff, you know, and they were like pushing like Contagion, all these zombie virus films and stuff, and like, and obviously probably companies like, is it Asylum? They do the really awful...
Yeah, they do.
They probably churn out some... It's probably got a bad tasting name. I mean, in like dark times, why do people want more horror, don't they? They do sort of seek it out. And not just horror fans.
All surrounding experience. You're completely underwater, aren't you? If it's happening in the real life and you're watching it on a telly, it's got to just freak you out.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that some people, it's a sort of escapism though as well, because horror's like it's fiction, isn't it? So at the end of the day, it's a sort of safe way to deal with those fears.
Well, because the real horror is going on elsewhere, for example, I don't know, the American election or something like that.
What I'm looking forward to now is that every zombie film in the future we'll now have a group of people denying the zombie virus and saying
it's been started by a phone signal. That's coming, isn't it? We know it's coming. Yeah, I would say when the virus started, I know that Nobro had a load of submissions about, you know, COVID.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Like, people really want to get on board with what's happening.
It's the current thing, isn't it? It's whatever's the current thing. You know, someone's sitting there going, oh, I'll do a comic about it. People just pay attention to Netflix and whatever.
Thing is, like, horror's always reflected that. I'm going into a bit of a horror spiel, but like, if you look at, like, say, the late 60s, early 70s in America, you got films like The Last House on the Left and stuff. If you watch all these films, there's this sudden glut, like, it goes from being Transylvania and foreign horror to suddenly you've got Texas Chainsaw, Last House on the Left, and everything's really inside America. And if you look at like any sort of cops in these films, they're really incompetent. And you get this whole thing sort of post-Flower Power and post-Watergate, where all these horror films are just like basically about how messed up America is.
Yeah, you get stuff about the rise. You get stuff about the rise of feminism, don't you? You get stuff about the rise of hallucinogenics. There's a lot of stuff that parallels horror, isn't there? All the way through, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's sort of one of the things we draw on a bit as well. It's like how horror fits with what's going on in the world, and I think it gets such a bad rap as a genre, doesn't it? But actually, I think
it can be the biggest mirror to the world, really, isn't it? People see it as the very much like comic books themselves. People dumb it down so they can understand it. You know, the biff bang pow that people think comics is, but you think no. If you actually look at it, and horror has the same stigma. The horror as a genre has a similar stigma to comics as a medium. People just look at it and think it's all slashes, it's all just monsters and gore and blood and this, that and the other. But even the things that have that, there's so many more layers to it, isn't it?
I think horror of every comic genre has got the worst name, isn't it, since Wortham. That's the thing. Mm. Since Wortham, and I remember even as a kid in the sort of 80s traveling to France, and there was things you couldn't take out of France, and one of them was horror comics. So it said like flick knives, you know, this sort of thing. And yeah. one of them was specifically horror comics. You couldn't bring them into the country. And that was in the same time, what was that, 83, 84, when it was around that time that we got the Video Nasty Act, didn't we? We got the. And I'm as a 12 year old going to a video shop and renting a triple X zombie film. Yeah.
The Video Nasties is just an evolution of what happened with, like, you know, the Tales, the old sort of EC comics and comics back.
The Wortham stuff. Yeah.
It was just the same thing. It was a big moral panic about horror. Comic was the big medium then. VHS was the big medium in the 80s. You can argue that there's a bit of it going around with video games now.
Yeah,
sort of in the noughties. It's the same sort of moral panics about different mediums.
Mm. I tried to bring this point up with Durf Batduff about Kent State, as in, is it easier to you have a moral panic than actually look at the root cause of the issue? Do you know what I mean? If society's fucked up, and then you say, "Oh, it's the films we're watching," and we all, I presume that everyone knows that's not the case, but we're doing this as some kind of like pantomime to make it seem like
you're always looking for the shortcut to the drama for the news item, aren't we? That's the thing, which is video nasty, video games, you know, horror comics, and it's an easy outcome. It's no one takes the complicated route, which is actually the truthful route.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen the Human Centipede films? Bear with me a second.
I've not seen the one in Guantanamo Bay. I've not seen that one yet.
Yeah. It's just really interesting. Like, the first one is actually, for all the talk of how extreme it is, isn't actually that extreme. It's a lot of it is implied.
Right. Okay.
And the second one is a direct reaction to what everyone was saying the first one was like. It's like all the critics were talking about the first one in this way that it's not very explicit. So the director deliberately went, you know what, I'm going to make the second one, and it's going to be every single thing everyone said the first one was. And it's kind of like, and the fact that the character in the second one is a fan of the first movie who's inspired by it to go and create his own. It's kind of, even there, it's a commentary on that kind of moral panic criticism.
Completely. And that happens with horror so much as well. People talk about like the classics of horror, and certainly it's always it's the first film syndrome as well. You know, people will talk about Psycho, being this, that, and the other. But when you watch it, there's very little.
Same with Jaws. I remember as a kid, everyone was saying, "Oh, Jaws is an X," and it wasn't. It was like a PG or something.
And like things like I'm a massive fan of the first Saw film. I don't really care for the franchise.
Saw 1's good.
But Saw 1 is a really good thriller that your mind has to do a lot of the work. You don't see the dude cut his own leg off. You hear it, and like your mind does all the work. And like you say, the studio then take things like that and say, oh, people want that. Let's give them that and let's show them that. And I think a lot of horror is better as tell, don't show.
Yeah,
But that for comics, that's a difficult thing. That can be a difficult thing to make a really creepy, atmospheric comic. Thankfully, since we started the show over the past 5 years, and there's lots of independent creators that have managed to creep me out. But it's very difficult to creep people out without showing them anything. And you guys, you must have so many different sort of you cover a lot of genres with your books. And the audience wants different things, don't you? So, I mean,
well, I think horror is something you've got to involve. A horror story is almost another genre included. So it's like a psychological thriller, or it's like a fantasy film, or it's like a science fiction thing. There's always a combination of a couple of things going on. It's very rare that it's just, or a slasher movie even, you know.
It's very rare. I'd argue horror isn't really a genre, because how can you pigeonhole horror? It is exactly what you're saying. It is a combination. I mean, even Dracula is it's a fantasy, isn't it, ultimately?
Yeah.
It's a historical. It's a, isn't it, as well?
So, like, and Frankenstein is science fiction. So
And these tales were written in times before genres became such a specific thing. You know, people had to narrow down things, put things in boxes in order to, you know, have an HMV DVD section. This has already gone highbrow, and it's quite surprising to me. I didn't think, that's the beauty of this show.
Somewhere downwards to go.
We'll let Matt talk in a minute, and that's where it all goes downhill. But no,
you'd say The Thing is described as a horror film when it's not Well, I guess it can be, but...
Kind of a sci-fi movie as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's more of a sci-fi, and... Yeah, it's building up the tension and the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And obviously, the fantastic effects by... Is it Rob Bouton? And
yeah.
But, yeah, it's an odd one. I can't just class that as a horror film.
Yeah. I mean, I love that film a lot of... But one of the reasons I love that film is the atmosphere of that film.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Rather than the effects, people will go on about the monsters or this, that, and the other.
Oh, no, it's like... the interplay between the characters in that movie.
Yeah, God,
yeah. For me. Yeah. But, I mean, a lot of people, I mean, they don't really see that White Chicks is, in fact, also a bit of a comedy. You know, people just see it as this horrific horror film.
Yeah. I've never seen that film, thank God.
I wanted to pick up something you said about horror comics, though. Actually, well, it's quite interesting. You say, like, tension is a difficult thing to do.
Okay, yeah.
On the other hand... And almost flip that as well and say, whilst you can draw something gory, drawing something gory is perhaps not going to have the same visceral effect that actually seeing a gore. It might look very cool or something, but I think you've got to do something more than just show the gore, even in a gory comic.
Yeah, well, because you don't have the noise and you don't have the movement.
Yeah, the noise makes is a big
There's
part
so many
of gore,
tools
isn't it,
that
really?
A filmmaker has at their disposal to get cheap scares and stuff that... just not available as comic creators. We don't have those to lean on. Like a jump sound, like, will get people jumping, but yeah, we don't have that.
So, I mean, you got to play with the page turn of you guys, or is that part of it? Or
yeah, that's something we've started doing more and more, isn't it, Matt? As
I think we kind of learned along the way that I think a lot of our inspiration to start with was films, and comics aren't films, so you can't dictate how fast someone's reading or if they, you know, dwell on one panel or move to another. And I think we've started to write to the medium more, where you do have your reveals on kind of a left-hand page, so it's like you don't see it coming. And that's certainly something we've used, and I think also having a good letterer really helps, because they help with the flow of things.
A good
sound effect.
If someone's bringing down a hammer off panel and you just get like a hideous noise, you know what's happening.
And darkness works very differently in comics, doesn't it? You know, the dark claustrophobic feel of walking down a dark corridor in a horror film just doesn't work the same way in a comic, because it's just a dark panel with a load of lettering. You know, it's like,
I think there's been only a few comics that have actually scared me through their sort of atmosphere and visuals, and it takes a really good artist to pull that off.
What are those books?
I'm just trying to think. Actually, one of the first kind of horror comics I ever read were actually the epic Hellraiser comics. Because I was into Hellraiser and I saw these comics and wanted to read them. And there was a particular story from one of them which had a really kind of painterly style to it.
They called Tapping the Vein or something, was that?
And the Tapping the Vein was the adaptations of the Books of Blood that Clive Barker did.
Okay,
Epic did a five-year run, Hellraiser book, from 1988 to 1994.
They did a Martial Law Pinhead crossover,
that was part of that run. Yeah. And they had people working on the Hellraiser comic were, you know, Alex Ross, Mike Mignola, Neil Gaiman did one at the end with David McKean. The Wachowski sisters wrote quite a few of them. So it was an interesting sort of play area of that era. Yeah. But some of them had some really very dark, haunting kind of art that was quite freaky. And there was this story that used the plague doctor imagery. And I don't know how they drawn it, but it was quite misty and
lingered in your brain for long after you had sort of seen it. Yeah.
Yeah,
which is what good art can do, isn't it? And, you know, it's just good art stays with you.
I mean, I think we don't credit The Walking Dead enough for that overarching, you know, overbearing feelings of dread and death around every corner kind of. And I reading them in trade, I always find it quite a sort of tiring experience reading that book.
It's a harrowing journey.
So depressing, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's because it's the survival post-apocalyptic horror, isn't it? It's that.
And
it does a rare thing of, like, no one is safe, but you're not quite sure who's going to go at any time. Whereas a lot of comics suffer from, they try to instill that, but if you don't care about the characters, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's all kinds of tropes. I mean, a lot of the monster stuff that Marvel does, the, you know, the you know, the Franken castle and all that sort of thing. It doesn't have that impact, does it? It's just using characters that have appeared in horror films, which doesn't quite work. Mm. Yeah.
They've got, like, they're doing the, isn't it like X-Men versus Aliens? And it's just like, why? Why bother?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's kind of, you know, no one's going to die. There's no threat. There's no...
Mm. Superman versus Aliens, Batman versus, you know, it's all... Mm.
I mean, the whole sort of, like, franchise tie-ins and stuff, I mean, I'm never really into that too much anyway, especially, like, Superman Aliens. I mean, I don't mind that. Some people love it, but it's not really my cup of tea. But I think it's interesting that, for instance, a horror movie tie-in comic, shall we say, adaption, like the Hellraiser comics, like you say, they obviously stuck with you and they inspired you to make comics, and that's a series that I heard quite a lot about, and I think have inspired a lot of people in the future.
They have a lot of talent. The artist, by the way, who did it, I sort of found his name was Mike Okamoto. So
okay.
So it was the name of the chat, and I said there's a lot of amazing artists working for that.
Is that what inspired you to start making like horror comics yourself? At what point did? How did Hellbound Media all start with you both?
Yeah.
It kind of started that way, didn't it, Matt? That we
a mutual friend, didn't it, that put us together?
Yeah, actually.
Because I used to play, I don't know if anyone played the online game City of Heroes.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And it became an avenue for role playing. So we'd play the game, but we'd also write
stories. Here we go.
And then I kept saying, oh, I'd really like, you know, to do comics or do horror films. And one of the players said, oh, I know this guy. We're part of a Hellraiser online group. And he put us in touch, and then we met at a convention.
Bristol, in fact. Bristol Comic-Con.
Okay.
Missed that so
much. Yeah, we just started doing our own stuff. And because Mark had already done the Hellbound Web, Hellraiser...
We did a Hellraiser fan comic, basically. Me and a bunch of Hellraiser fans who were really talented artists, some of which still work for Hellbound now. We liked that epic one from the early days, and at the time, it had been a long period of time. So it was essentially a bit of fun fan fiction. We went, can we put together a Hellraiser comic? And we sort of did that, and then me and Matt were like, oh, that would work really well. Why don't we do our own stuff? And that was sort of the spark, wasn't it, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. And then, like Mark says, we use some of those artists, kind of matrix, that kind of thing, to get us started. And a few of them have now gone on to bigger things. And
It can't be undersold how many books you have on your... I mean, you've been doing this for a few years now, and you've...
10.
Yeah.
There you go.
10 next year. It's our 10th anniversary.
Wow. What are you going to do for it? What have you got planned?
Yeah.
A lot of books.
Yeah. Bookers?
Maybe. Yeah,
we have to sell all the books that we haven't been able to sell this year. So.
Yeah, because you, whenever we've spoken at shows and stuff, not only do you have a vast lineup of books, but you have, there's always plans for things moving forward. You're always planning, you know, like a proper publisher, which you are. Do you know what I mean? You've got your lineup of books, and then you're always thinking to the future. How far ahead do you plan your books? He takes a drink.
a long time. Depends, doesn't it, Matt? Because
it's hard to say, because it's more the time that it takes, because a lot of the artists that we use, you know, they've got day jobs or they've got higher paying gigs.
Yeah.
Some of our comics have taken a year or two just to get finished.
Mm.
And we've got ones that we want to do that have been with us since the very beginning that we still haven't done yet.
Wow.
I mean, look at Legacy that's just come out in Shock Value Legacy in lockdown. So we've only sold that via the initial Kickstarter, really, and a few online when we launched. But that one was probably overall in development for 3 years. But in that period, we released Giallo. So we kind of, with the Shock Value, which is our anthology series, we kind of have one in production in terms of the comic, the art coming together, getting close to release. We have one that we're writing the scripts and coming up with the idea. And then we usually have a vague idea what, if we're going to do another one, what its theme would be. So it's sort of, I suppose, a not production line, but we're always thinking ahead as well as in the now, because
you do kind of have to have that sort of production line mentality, yeah, isn't it? When you say the words production line, it sounds like, oh, it sounds like a job.
Yeah,
but
I think it's better. We refer to it as a slate, don't we? So you have that slate of books, which is always, I think, I know what you mean. But yeah, it's always nice to have that planned out in advance in almost like a calendar. Yeah.
So, and sometimes books keep getting knocked down the slate for various reasons. Yeah. Artists. So we've got the sequel to one of our books for like 5 years ago, and it's just been knocked down and down and down. It's really close to being completed now. But so that's the sequel to Kiss Me Deadly, which is the vampire one. So the sequel's kind of about Irish mafia werewolves.
Okay.
Oh, that classic genre.
Yeah. So it's called The Dogfather.
Dogfather.
and that's been ongoing for like 5 or 6 years, but it's like coming to that point now where we're hoping to have the first one out next year. So it really can range. And sometimes, like with Lyndon, when we work with Lyndon White, who's like a powerhouse machine, like once he got the scripts, he just zoomed through them.
Yeah, he works at a hell of a pace, and it's all his quality.
He's doing a Frankenstein Kickstarter at the moment, isn't he, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Let me put this out there then, guys. Is there any artist that you would say is quintessentially a horror artist? You know, when you see his work, you think he's best suited to horror. I'll say one, and I always think this about him, and he doesn't always do horror stuff, but I just find him suited because he's got that strange style. Is Richard Corbin? To me, his style is almost like fucking frightening.
Yeah,
you know, there's just a strangeness to it, which I think is more suited to that. I mean, I guess you'll probably say Vince Bernie Wrightson.
Oh, I'm going to say Bernie Wrightson all day, every day. Bernie Wrightson is
Someone not already working in horror, I assume.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, who that doesn't normally work in horror would be interesting to see as a horror artist? Because some people just. You know, when you have like different, and this could be not necessarily big publishers, it could be indie as well. You know, I'd love to see some people take on like a scary book.
It's strange, isn't it? Because it's such an all-encompassing, and we're not calling it a genre, but an area of comics. I was about to say Gabriel Barr, but then I remembered. No, he's done that thing in the Hellboy universe, isn't he? Like that vampire one, which works really well, even though he's got a sort of slightly more sort of cartoony style.
Yeah,
it just that counterpoint is what makes it frightening, I think, sometimes.
I think it can really work, actually, cartoony styles in horror, if you get the tone and the story right as well, so it fits. It can almost give it a... I mean, I would say I've read a few books like that that have, you know, what you consider more cartoon art, but it gives it a kind of...
A charm? I
don't know, a charm and a perhaps a retro feel as well, I think.
Okay, right.
Yeah, because like let's not forget, a lot of these books, as we said, the ones that were getting banned in the past, if you saw a lot of this horror now, I mean, some of these hardened comics readers who have read, I don't know, Crossed or something like that, they'll look at these older comics and just go, well, that's tame. You know, and as society moves on, people, we're numb to these things, aren't we?
I think we're losing that twist ending. That's the beauty of the writing sometimes is what brings out the horror, isn't it? Mm. It's all right having Crossed and everyone holding a horse dong or whatever it is they've got in that. But, you know, it's like some of those creepies and eeries and vampirellas and psychos and stuff like that. It's the ending you went, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
You
know, that's also going to an anthology, sort of.
Yeah,
that
like, pacing as well, 2008 thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean... Obviously, you've got the Shock Value books. You know, how have you found the evolution of crafting an ending to a short horror story? Because when you're writing things, that's a difficult thing to land, isn't it? When you've got like 6 pages, 8 pages to get you,
to
stick
the landing. It's a tight because you need to be invested in a character to find his or her whatever befalls them to be horrific, haven't you? And you've got to build that in a clever way very quickly, I think.
Mm.
It's right, killing someone you don't care about it.
Matt, are you...
Yeah, I think with me, it's usually character first and getting inside their head. And as Mark often says, I'm not the best at short stories. My short stories are usually 12 pages long. but I think what we found is through the relationship of working together, one will write, one will edit, and it'll go back and forth. So it's kind of... Certainly now there's a lot more time put into it and craft put into it. And I think our last two books, we've never really liked the, oh, it's a vampire twist ending, which you see in a lot of anthologies, which I think a lot of our stuff is different and it's kind of psychological as well.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
But certainly in Legacy.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to challenge you that on Slaughterhouse Farm. I'd like to add. Yeah.
No, just like you're psychologically scarred by Slaughterhouse. Yeah.
sorry, dude. Carry on.
Yeah. So, I think with Legacy, we've definitely gone for more of a traditional story, kind of with a setup and then a twist. But it's always the character that's important.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Which is where good horror works, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to be careful of being known as the twist people. You know what I mean? Because like you could do an M Night Shyamalan where everyone's watching the film thinking, "Oh, what's the twist going to be?" And then,
yeah,
it becomes a gimmick.
Yeah, the like twist even... is like, "Oh, it's a werewolf." Well, there's a werewolf on the cover. I kind of worked out there's a werewolf.
There's only so many times you can pull that off, isn't there? As a single writer, I think sometimes,
I mean, I think we sort of try and mix it up, don't we? A bit like sometimes, rather than a twist, you just end on something that's quite notable or kind of like a striking image or something that kind of just makes you go ooh, rather than trying to build a deliberate twist or sometimes if you're doing, because we try and have a mix in our books, like maybe it's got a kind of comedic twist at the end or something, I think just if every single story in there was, and here's the twist ending, I think by the third one, you just start reading it going, right, where's the twist?
Yeah, it's why 2000 AD never had a Future Shock in every single issue, did they? Because you kind of run out of it, wouldn't you? The surprise of it isn't enough.
But, it's, I mean, moving from the shorts...
I was going to say a lot of the horror that really kind of appeals to me is the story where it's got tragedy at the end. And that's the kind of the general horror tone throughout. Pays off. There's a bleakness, and at the end you're like, "Oh fucking hell!"
The thing that sticks.
They're in shit now. Yeah, that's the stuff that sticks you.
Yeah,
kind of the gore and horror. Like I can take that, but like the much harder version is to get that kind of chill ending.
Yeah. I mean, certainly we had that competition. Was it last year? We had the the 4-page horror short, wasn't it? Which was it 3 pages? I mean, because you actually drew it, Dan. Didn't you?
Three or four pages, for Tony Venres. And it's online on his website. Go read it.
Yeah.
That was an interesting exercise because I think we all read a load of scripts around that, didn't we? And then it ended up with two of us got that as the winner and the other person did it as the second favourite. So it's weird, isn't it, that one was just so right for it.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, I mean, sometimes it's just atmosphere or ideas can make something horrific. I think... one of the comics I read earliest that wasn't explicitly horror, but I thought had that aesthetic and feel to it, and I was reading it around the same time I was reading some of the early Hellraisers, was Sandman. There's some really dark and dark and quite depressingly sort of twisty and quite creepy ideas in there, and some like stuff that really resonates.
Yeah, I mean, on some levels, Batman is a horror comic. Mm. I mean, see the villains in that. You know, scarring themselves for everyone they kill, or you know, one's a ventriloquist who's machine guns people, and there's
and
elements
people,
of it.
People love to take that, certainly even with the modern stuff, they love to take that. He's one of the easier, bigger sort of titles to then go, oh, yeah, let's make this completely horror. Like, there was the what was the Kelly Jones one?
Oh, Red Rain, was it, or something like that?
Batman as a
vampire,
he's a vampire.
I almost think you don't need to do that for it to be dark and horror. I think you could do horror without inherently changing the nature of his world.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
he's
hunting serial killers, basically. So it's Seven, but with a cape on. You know, it's basically,
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the day, there was Arkham Asylum.
Which is a horrific one. Yeah, very
that's
disturbing. You know, so there's a child sex offender element to it. There's a psychopathic element to it. There's a going insane element to it. There's all sorts of things going on in that book. Yeah, yeah.
I was going to bring up an example. We mentioned it earlier in the show about like the horror and pushing the limits.
Yeah.
It's one of the kind of genres you can. And I did buy a comic. I don't want to name it. Maybe I shouldn't name it by the title, but... it's a Nazi werewolves from outer space. And I saw it. I thought, I'm going to look for a horror comic. And this popped up. And like an indie creators group, and I thought, oh, I'll give this a go, and bought it. And it's a real shame because, like, you've got a title with sort of body mutilation, werewolf, Nazis, and it's really like you're not, it's just not pushing it enough, or you've fucking got Nazis and werewolves in it, just go for it. And
that's a sale on a title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly with those sort of topics, you have to be careful in some ways the way you do it. But when it's the same with movies, when people do those, they go completely over the top, don't you? What's that? Is it Iron Sky? Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. On the moon, Nazis in space, that kind of thing. Thank you. Yeah, and if you've got like Nazi werewolves, you've got to go Grindhouse. Surely you've got to go.
Yeah, it's got to go Grindhouse.
Has anyone come across Requiem Vampire Night?
Love it, man.
Pat Mills, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we talk about that in a minute. You'll hear something about that very soon, folks.
That's a bit of a spoiler.
Never ended, did it? It sort of.
No, it's
stopped.
Still going.
So, is it?
Yeah, he's working on the next one. Yeah.
We've got like 5 volumes that we bought years ago, and then I don't know if they published or printed more, like 5 collected books.
Yeah, I think because it's a French company, there is more stuff. I know he's working on it. I think he's a bit slow with the new one, but yeah. And that's weird, so weird you mentioned that, dude, because that gets mentioned in a minute.
It's just because what Dan said about, you know, the use of Nazis and the like. Yeah. But I thought actually that handles it well. It's not comfortable.
Yeah, but I can see it. You being a Clive Barker fan, that fitting in, because it's got that very strange feel to it, isn't it? It's very different. Yeah, it's like Clive Barker crossed with 2000 AD, crossed with, I don't know, Knights. And, you know, it's an incredibly beautiful book, isn't it?
Well, the art is fantastic. I love the werewolves. They're just huge, and the detail of the art on them is really beautiful. And it's got some, but for all the big spectacle, it's got some really subtle moments in there as well. And I think they almost stand out more because it's so over the top in everything else.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great series. I know Titan put some collections out, didn't they? I think they bought the English rights to it.
But there you go. There's more to come, dude. So you got. There's more books to put on your wish list in the future. That's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Are there any monthlies that you're buying, guys, that are horror? Do you buy? Can horror be a monthly comic? Do you think?
I can't think of any of that. I kind of think horror works better in miniseries, perhaps.
The Hellboy model.
There are some, I would say, that people are probably screaming at their whatever they listen to. Things like Harrow County and stuff like that, which have an ending. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to go to 50. But you know, you get a good 30 to 40 issues, a few trades. But it's telling one story, and I think a lot of things like the plot is another one which is going at the moment, and that deals with, like you say, there's 6 issue arcs. I think a lot of these books, they deal with, it's almost 6 issues tell a story, and that's like chapter 1 of your horror book.
Hellboy is a folk horror, isn't it? Yeah, really. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I think with horror, again, it's sort of Vince picked up on that, is that if it's just constantly ongoing, I think horror works best when there is an endpoint or a series of endpoints that brings it together. Whether that's a negative ending or a cathartic ending, I don't think necessarily matters, but I think otherwise your story, I don't know, it risks not becoming horror anymore or just going on needlessly too long. Yeah. I don't know.
And even the classics, you know, if you go back to the Dracula books from Marvel,
Tomb of Dracula,
you know, 1-2 issues and you got a tale, or just straight up one issue. After one issue, you got like a new story every so often. You know, they didn't overstay their welcome, which I think horror can't afford to linger.
I think the modern image writer tends to almost often string it out too long for me. I think if it's more than, you know, a couple of issues to tell a horror story, sometimes it's like, where's this going? And it becomes something else. It becomes about relationships and, you know, it almost becomes sometimes a soap opera and that sort of thing.
What was that one about the girls where, like, it was all these girls turn up and they're, like, all identical?
Oh, I think it's called Girls by the Luna Brothers. Girls. I've got that. That is mental, that book.
Right, okay.
I think
God. That's all about sex as a disease, isn't it? Yeah,
I've not read it, but I saw the concept, and I thought it looked good.
Yeah, no, it's a good read.
One of my favourite horror sort of comics, as it were, not ongoing, it's the work of Junji Ito.
Yeah.
So there's some amazing stuff, like the Enigma of...
Yeah,
I can't remember if the fault.
Probably the title. Just,
I think that was.
Is it Animara Fault or I've probably murdered that name?
Yeah, it's one of them. Yeah,
and that what I will go on record to say that might be one of the books the stories that's been mentioned the most.
I think you're right, man.
In
yeah.
the history yeah. of this podcast.
Yeah. It's so iconic. Good. It turns up in the kids' cartoon series Steven Universe getting a reference.
Oh,
I mean, that's,
oh my god,
there's a horror story for you. Yeah.
All encompassing. It's known that story, yeah. but it's really powerful and effective just from simple images. Mm. But it's other stuff as well. What's it called?
He did Frankenstein one, did he?
Mm, yeah, Gio is another one.
So basically, walking, farting fish monsters. It's just like.
Well, aren't we all?
Yeah. I think there's a good one that I read recently is Ronin Island, which is a 12 issue series. Which is really good, and that's about kind of like almost like a disease infestation in the Edo period.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of people living on an island and surviving.
Was that Aftershock?
It is Boom, that one.
Boom.
Yeah. And what happens is the outside world encroaches, and it just becomes like a race to survive. And pretty fucking good. It's written by Greg Pak, but done in a kind of manga struck BD style. There's a bit of a sort of joining of the two there, but yeah, very good. That's well worth a look. Yeah.
Indie comics, like small press scene, is where I find a lot of my favorite horror at the moment. I think there's a lot of interesting titles there and a lot of interesting sort of approaches. And again, because it's sort of small press and the indie, you see them at the con, you see they tend to be shorter stories that have a clear idea and are just get in there, scare you hopefully, or
Did you ever read any of the DC stuff? Like House of Mystery, House of Secrets, The Witching Hour, any of that stuff, dude? That's really good. That's very much twist in the tale stuff.
I actually tended to read. It's weird. I've got this weird period where I read a lot of really old comics, like the really old ones we're talking about, and then sort of jump forward.
Yeah.
So like my comic. This is one of the things I was thinking about before coming on here. Is how did I get into comics in general, and I just sort of realized that comics have always been part of my life for various things, but my earliest comics were sort of 60s and 70s superhero comics, which my uncle had a huge box of at the end of the bed that he just kept, and I just go around and take some and read some. He's sort of given them to me, so I've got like the very first Black Panther issue of Fantastic Four and stuff like that. And that he's just...
What's your address, mate?
they're in terrible condition. They've got bits falling off.
That won't stop him.
He's got like some missing ones. Like he's got the issues either side of the finale of the Phoenix Saga, but I think he sold that one.
Yeah. Right.
But it's this whole range. So I sort of grew up on these comics. I think the oldest one I've got is Daredevil 9. So, which is kind of weird. So when I saw the Daredevil film, the last issue of Daredevil I read as a child was the first one that Frank Miller's, started working on?
Right, yeah.
So where he's not really got his step there. So I suddenly went into this film and the only Daredevil I knew was the more kind of light and fluffy acrobatic Daredevil of the 60s. I was like, this is different. So, anything on that kind of edgy, I had no idea of it until that film came out.
But then, like, the medium itself, it just soaks into your bones, doesn't it? You get a feel for, like, telling a story. What about you, Matt? When did you first start reading comics?
My introduction to comics came from North Wales caravan parks.
That's the classic that we've, how many people have told us
what,
that?
What, caravan club?
Well, so you'd go to the newsagents, so the shop, and they would have a bag of like 10 or 20 comics, and you'd take them, and they wouldn't be in order, there wouldn't be a series. You'd pick up middle things. So it was that really got me into it.
Mm.
And then when it came to me having sort of my own money later on, it was like the characters that I liked from those that kind of, I've always been a Batman fan since day one. So it was like, then I started investing and then going to comic shops and spending money I didn't have on variant covers. And that didn't last too long. So. Comics to read, not to, you know.
What about recent horror comics that you've read that you've really enjoyed that you could recommend as a horror read coming up on Halloween?
My main thing about comics now is I tend to get them from people I speak to at conventions.
Right.
So yeah. I get a lot from John A. Short at Cult Creations.
Yeah.
And he's just brought out Helga Frankenstein. I say just brought out. It might have been on my reading pile for a long time, and I've just read it. But
we've all been there.
Yeah.
I live there.
Yeah.
But that's kind of inspired by Universal and Hammer, but then he's done his own take on it, which is very much what Hellbound Media is about. It's about these are our influences, but we're going to put it through the Hellbound filter kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed Helga Frankenstein. There was one called MI666. I don't know if anyone's read that.
Oh, that's a class book.
Yeah.
God, have you actually read that?
Is it any good?
Yeah, it's good. It definitely
purposely left a little pause there.
No, it definitely left me wanting more, like more quality writing and.
Touche. I can appreciate that, you bastard.
What about you, Mark? Sorry, man.
Yeah, so I've been reading, again, a lot of indie is where I go to. I know Time Bomb has some pretty good books out at the moment. Also thinking of, I quite like Dexter's Half Dozen, which I was from Deadstar, which is kind of a comic that's been going for a while. It's got a kind of really old Boyzone World War II British versus demon Nazis. Yeah. I always think there's this kind of slight stiff upper lip British Hellboy kind of vibe going on with that one. So I enjoyed that. And anything put out by Mike Gar. I always get, there's two of them mixed up. I always get mixed, Mike Garley and...
Old Mike Garley, don't get the mix out, for God's sake. It's like Candyman. He'll appear behind you and kill you.
Yeah.
Got them mixed up to the extent that one of them told him off on Twitter.
Yeah.
He said, will you pimp our new Kickstarter? He's like, who the fuck are you?
I mean, there's also, Afterlight Comics. They're putting it like
Joey
Oliveira,
He, I mean, much like you, he's just turned into a burgeoning sort of publishing house, you know. And
he hits his mark with his Kickstarter straight off, doesn't he?
Yeah,
definitely.
And very much like you guys with Kickstarters as well. If we're getting to a bit of Kickstarter chat, which there might be a little bit more later when we get to the shout outs, but if you don't follow us, if you follow us, you know what we're going to talk about. But in terms of Kickstarters, I've always found that you guys, you've done successful Kickstarters, and you handle it as a pre-ordering service rather than like, give us some money and then we'll make this book. That's always the way you've gone about it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we've always said this book is coming out. And like you say, I think we maybe got that idea from Steve at Time Bomb, that he treats his as a pre-order as well.
Mm.
So it's not always about the rewards and things. The main thing is the book. But Mark's kind of more of our Kickstarter expert than me.
I just think it's a way to do it. If we're going to do it anyway, we just really want to help ourselves. You know, it's small press, it's expensive printing books and stuff. So it's sort of a way of actually helping us cover those costs early on, so we can, you know, print the book.
Yeah.
Without, you know, being, and two, and this is actually what did matter more, it's going to be a bit impacted by changes recently, but it's the audience. On Kickstarter, you're going to reach a much wider international audience than you do not on Kickstarter. Now with posters costs changing as they are, that's going to make a heavy impact. But I would say we get a huge number of people from America. We had ones from Australia. We had Oh, where was it? We had one from somewhere, New Zealand as well.
That's amazing, isn't it? Obviously, like with the pre-order, obviously you've got it's guaranteed sales. You know you've covered the cost for a lot of things, but not just the cost of printing. You know people are going to have this book. People are going to read.
It's essentially print on demand, isn't it? It is in a long form way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good way of getting it out there, and it also makes it easier on us, you know, in terms of paying artists as well, because we've got that element sort of covered as well. So it's just sort of balanced as we've gone on. As we've gone on, it's helped us.
What have been the learnings for certainly not just doing a Kickstarter for a comic, but a Kickstarter for a horror comic? Because as we say, the horror genre can be a tough sell for, you know, certain people who don't if they see a monster on the cover, they don't look at it, do they? How are you going about sort of marketing these books on that sort of crowdfunding platform?
I mean, specifically on there, it depends on the book, and that sort of matters at Comic-Con as well. I mean, we've sort of touched on this, I think, across our chat today, and what me and Matt always say is our kind of ethos of Hellbound Media is horror is many things for many people.
Yeah.
It's everything from a spooky film like The Others to a kind of gory, violent Texas Chainsaw Centipede Massacre. I don't know. Yeah.
What a film that is.
There can be a real esoteric element to it. I'm just looking at a copy of Blood Realm in front of me from Alterna at the moment, and that's just the strangest silhouetted, you know, esoteric, poetical almost, you know, like gothic poetry thing going on, and that's a horror book.
Exactly. So we've got our character Mandy the Monster Hunter, who I suppose we write with adults in mind in terms of themes, but content wise we try and keep it young adult at most, so we get a lot of younger readers for that. And that's, I mean, one of my main ways into horror as well was Doctor Who as a child. I'm a big Doctor Who fan. Terrified me. So we want something similar, something that, you know, younger people can read and maybe spark their interest in monsters and things a bit darker and comics at the same time.
You do crave it, don't you? It's a bit like a good curry. Occasionally you crave a good horror film, don't you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you just need that bit of your brain poked a bit, don't you, to be frightened. And it makes us feel a bit more alive sometimes, doesn't it? You know?
Exactly. And that's the thing. And of all ages. So, you know, we've got on our table on our Kickstarter, Mandy the Monster Hunter, here, 10-year-old, have a look at that. No, puts the little house farm down right away. And so our Kickstarters, we have to try and pitch them depending, you know, on what the comic is, what the story is, who the audience is, and what we think will appeal.
Can I just say this? You're both a pair of degenerates. I'd like to point that out, and which is the reason I enjoy Slaughterhouse Farm so much. Yeah, but I know we've mentioned Slaughterhouse Farm a couple of times now. Did you want to give us a rundown of it?
What are we talking about, folks, when we talk about how degenerate they are? Go on, just give us a quick pitch for that.
Matt, do you want me? Oh, you want me?
See, they're even scared to talk about it.
The villain's called Pigfucker.
Basically, it's a couple take these Asbo kids out on to a holiday camp in North Wales, funny enough, and they turn a bend and they come across Pigfucker doing what he does, and then he systematically fucks and kills them.
It reminds me of there's an indie British horror movie called Inbred, I think it's called.
Oh God, that film is.
It reminds me of that sort of. It's almost like a genre on its own, isn't it? It's like the holiday, you know, the kids on holiday or the family on holiday, and they come across a farm full of fucking mutants, you know. It's like that, isn't it? Yeah,
again, like we say, with the time the comics come out, I think it took about 2 years from script to the comic coming out, so I think Inbred came out kind of as the script was done.
Gotcha. It always works like that.
Alvin Jones, he's very into his kind of old horror from Universal, Hammer, through to slashers, and he keeps saying, "Oh, you've been inspired by this," and it must be ingrained in my head. Like, I think, is it Monster or Maniac, that film we watched?
Oh yeah.
And they'll say, "Oh, were you inspired by this?" I was like, "Well, not knowingly, but maybe I was inspired by something that was inspired by that."
What's interesting is you're a lot more inspired by like 70s and that kind of grindhouse feel, aren't you, Matt? Like, I mean, you lean a bit more that way, yeah. Whereas I lean a bit more to the 80s slasher and then a little bit more towards the kind of gothic and supernatural horror, which means I think we get a sort of a mix between us. But and Slaughterhouse is very much firmly planted into that kind of grimy 70s feel, but the comic feel of it, I think, like the art style, it's inspired by something, isn't it, Matt? It's the art that Arvin does. He based it on
Rondo Hatton, who played the Creeper in the Universal films.
Okay. He was in a Basil Rathbone Sherlock Holmes.
Very possibly. He also inspired, I think it was a Brian Bolland strip in a Judge Dredd or a 2000 AD script. So someone said, oh, you stole that from Brian Bolland. He says, no, we stole it from the same guy that Brian Bolland stole it from.
yeah, which is always the way, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's basically, what if Rondo Hatton was drawn by the artist Sir Kiffin Williams, who's an Anglesey, North Wales artist. And there's even kind of the farmhouse is based on some of his artwork.
It's a great book, man. I really love that book. It just makes every time it turns up in Comic House, we all of us just giggle about it.
Yeah,
because it just properly goes there. You know,
it's a bit of an anomaly in that it was kind of written in the very early days of Hellbound, and it was all written all four issues between me and the co-writer AJ Ballard. So right. Mark didn't have that much of an influence on it, and you can tell in that the structure's really not good. In that. Everything happens. A lot of stuff happens in issue one. Nothing happens in issue two and three, and then everything happens in issue four. So,
I mean, issue four opens with the fence scene, though, which is probably the
oh, I know, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we mentioned that on the show a couple of times. Yeah,
you obviously having that separation from it. Then.
What with your balls,
with Mark? Mark, what did you feel? What did you think like when you saw, like the scripts for Slaughterhouse Farm for the first time? Did you think, holy shit, how are we going to do this?
Half of that's right. But no, I completely got what he was going for. I think there was stuff that I possibly wouldn't have done. And I think Matt talked about this a little bit, that
there's things I wouldn't do in it now. The sexual violence.
I think we'd sort of downplay this kind of elements of rape and up because... for various reasons, but upplay the gore and severe violent injury. So I think, in fact, that's what we're doing in the sequel entirely. So
you'll see, I think Zed and particularly Hospital are much more Hellbound comics. There's more of a structure to it, characters more important, but there's still there's a lot of gore. And if anyone's, I don't know if you've seen Zed, there's a lot of extreme stuff in Zed.
Cool. So Zed's kind of a side story that is a little bit more... Has anyone seen the film Planet Terror?
Yes.
Yeah.
Imagine Planet Terror made by Troma.
Right.
So Slaughterhouse Zed starts, basically, with... It's a one-page intro of mad scientists take genetic material from Pigfucker, body, splice it with an aggressive breed of pig and create Porker X, a half-man, half-pig zombie that then raises an army of pig hybrid zombies that go rampaging across North Wales.
Oh, you should add that he's got a massive...
But isn't that just North Wales?
Oh, yes.
Sorry, isn't that just North Wales?
I often tell Mark about some of the news stories I cover in North Wales, and you can see where I'm getting a lot of it from. So.
Are there any pre-existing horror projects, you know, things that exist already that you'd like to adapt, guys? I mean, you've got to be all over a Nightbreed adaptation, haven't you, Mark? You'd love that, wouldn't you?
I would. There's already been a 25-issue Nightbreed comic, and Epic did it in the early 90s. And they did
a new one, I think Boom did one, and it was pretty good. Yeah, yeah, actually.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of Boom's Hellraiser comic later on. I liked how it started, but...
I mean, they did a Nightbreed one as well.
But the Nightbreed one, actually, I really like. And actually, it reminds me, Boom did one of my favourite horror comics of recent years. I'm so glad you reminded me. With Clive Barker, it was the same team who did the Hellraiser one, but I think they hit the nail on the head with, what was it called, Next Testament?
Oh, right, I've not read that.
I don't know if you've read it. Basically, this guy goes digging in the desert, following like secret research and stuff, and uncovers the tomb of God. But he's purely the Old Testament God. And he basically releases him, and he's just this vain, narcissistic... He's still God, all-powerful, and he just starts destroying human civilization, saying, you know, build temples to worship me, and it's...
That sounds like a Clive Barker. Clive Barker.
It is, but it's a really, really nice comic. And the way he's depicted is, like, his human form, but he's just a sort of... Like, imagine he's just been painted in different colours.
Gotcha.
Like, almost an oil slick of colour. Oh. Just his entire body. And it's really visually nice. But I really liked that, actually. That was, as you say, Vince, very Clive Barker. But that was probably one of my favourite recent horror comics.
Ooh, is there anything else you'd like to adapt? Any, like, movies or TV series you think, oh, I'd get that. That would be good for us.
There's something
I know what I'd love to do. I think I was... Oh, yeah, after you, Matt.
Well, since a teenager, I've wanted to do this. And it's actually happened in recent years, is that... I always wanted to do a Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter.
Oh, yeah, Titan just did one, didn't they?
Yeah. Since I was 10, I've loved that film.
And Carolyn Monroe, man. Who doesn't love that? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I've got her to sign my copies of the comic as well.
Okay, man.
But yeah, that was always something that, you know, when I was kind of aspiring to do stuff, it was that I would love to do a Captain Kronos comic. Yeah. And I think... since then, I've kind of moved more into similar kind of hunting things, but I'm really into women with swords. So, like, Xena was my big thing in the 90s.
Right.
So there's a bit of that in Mandy and the Monster Hunter, but it's a lot more grounded. But yeah, I would love to do... I'd love to do a Xena comic, but...
They
used to be huge in the 90s. What about you, Mark?
Actually... So it says more about where my interests lie. And I talked to Matt about this. What I'd really love to do, actually, is the Insidious films as a comic series. Oh. Because if you actually watch them, it's really interesting how they've sort of done this franchise based around this character, but a whole sort of mythology of this place they call the Further, which is a kind of place between life and death where you have different entities. And what's interesting, they've done four films, but each film has a different villain. It's a different entity. So in two of the films, it's a demon. In two of the films, it's a dead person who's come back.
So it's kind of like got that sort of, you know, the Hellraiser comics and stuff where you've got this basis for it. You know, you've got the Further, and you can do whatever you want from that.
The Further kind of thing. You can play. And I just see so many ideas of stories in that world, you know, because entities are trying to possess the living, or they all want to get out there, you know, relive their lives. And there's loads of different ways of approaching it. I'm really interested in that kind of world building in horror.
That's
a big thing for me, which is why I'm a big fan of both Hellraiser and Nightbreed, because they have a lot of world building.
Tony, what was that comic you were talking about all the people who've got suicidal tendencies and they go to the camp to get killed off?
What was the name of it, Vince?
Is it Let's All Die? Is it
Let's All Die?
Let's All Die. That's one of the best.
That's a fantastic play on a concept.
I'm waiting for the last one of that to come out, because there's another one to go, isn't there? Yeah.
It's definitely one you should check
out. Who's publishing that?
It's self-published by Sean Gabarin, who is part of Action Lab, but he's self-publishing it. It's on Comixology.
It's very
good. That's worth checking out.
Very
good. He's the same guy who wrote the Puppet Master comic for them, which is actually pretty good.
Excellent.
Tony wants to do a Puppet Master special one day. So with this episode in mind, we asked our lovely people on social media, because you're the lovely people on social media, what do you like about horror comics, and in your opinion, who does them better, the bigger publishers or the small press? So we asked a few questions. Yes, it's always a small press. In fact, Damien from Art92, he said small press, there's no shackles on what they want to do.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right. Pete Dory, what he loves about horror, he said that would be Warren.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think we're missing a trick there. Not people who haven't read Warren, you know, like eerie and creepy and all that sort of thing. There's some amazing stuff going on there with the most amazing creators. Yeah.
Spooky Magpie.
Oh.
At Sketchy Magpie, I don't really read them so much as an adult, but when I were a nipper, the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror issues were as much a staple of my Halloween as the TV specials.
Okay.
Now, A lot of people talk about the Simpsons Treehouse Horror stuff, yeah, don't they?
Like Roger Langridge has done a few, and okay. A lot of creators have done some, haven't they? Yeah, yeah.
Hold on, I'm going to make a note there because my cat wants to leave the room.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's another.
Hooker's got leave, is it? Or...
Yeah. Damn. Damn. What is it? Jizzed in the face? Is that what it is? Yeah.
Right, I can still hear you.
I know, that's why.
Right, okay. I just knew if I didn't open the door, you'd just constantly hear meow, meow in the background. And I'm a professional, darling. That's what I mean, I'm a professional, darling.
Right, okay.
Ludology. Good old Ludologist 2014. He says, I think there's more gore in comics. With indie comics, there isn't the shoehorning in of characters that aren't made for horror. That's a good point. I think that's something that the big publishers do too much.
What's that, mate? Sorry, you lost me a bit there. What do you mean?
When you have, like, a horror comic, but then they try, like, something that's supposed to be scary and they put Spider-Man in it.
Oh, I get you. Do you know what? It worked for me for the first series of Marvel Zombies, and after that I'm like, yeah, I'm over this now.
Oh, I love the first series of that. It was a simple idea, and that's what it needed to stay with.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
John Ottaway, the famous murderer at John Ottaway. he brings up a point. I like when they disturb me enough to stick with me and make me uncomfortable. At Grandmaster Wook, James McCulloch is a master at that, to the point where I was almost kind of rooting for a child killer in City of Lost Souls.
Absolutely. No, I feel bad for not mentioning him before, because City of Lost Souls is superb. Drawn by Janine Van Musso.
Yeah, I think they're looking to collect that soon. I was chatting to James about it. I think they're going to collect that, and that make a lovely trade.
Fantastic. And as with all horror as well, like our lovely guest James, lovely bloke, does some disturbing stories. The nicest people always do the darkest stuff. Wes Craven, whenever you heard him, you just thought, he's so nice.
Yeah, it's true, actually. Yeah.
Always super intelligent as well. 4P at Mr. Thorpe. He says, I never know where to start. I read Who Needs the Moon? Love that book. An indie horror title a while back. But I'm looking forward to some more recommends. Well, there's been... Look, the show notes are going to have quite a lot, and our recommends are going to have a couple of nice titles that you need to check out as well. So you're welcome. We had quite a few comments on this one.
Yeah, you only put it out a couple of hours
ago. Shipco at Shippy Esquire. It depends on your definition of horror. But the Tom King, Gabriel Walter Vision series a few years back from Marvel was quietly, subtly terrifying. I can understand that.
The burying the body in the garden stuff going on, wasn't there?
Suburbia horror, isn't it? I think that's a genre by itself, isn't it? There's so many genres within the horror genre, but even to the point where things like Society totally play into that.
Genius, Brian Yuzner. How did he not win an Oscar for that?
That's the film Society. Did you know there was a comic sequel?
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's good. It came out a few years ago, didn't it?
I saw that. It was really interesting. I love that
I'm
film.
I'm thinking the name of the writer. Ed somebody, isn't it? I can't think of his last name. He's a good guy.
Met him at T-Bubs, I think. Our first T-Bubs we ever did, actually, I think. So it'd be a while ago.
Shippy also says, right now Edgar Allan Poe's Snifter of Terror from Ahoy Comics is both horrific and incredibly funny. At K_O_writing said, I think indie horror can often have the lion's share of horror treasures, but I actually loved DC's Joe Hill imprint.
There's some really good stuff. What was the one about the horror at sea that I talked about a few months ago? The plunge.
Yeah,
that's really good. Yeah, bag full of heads. Is it bucket full of heads or bag full of heads? Very good as well.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Joe Hill's books anyway. So there you go. Thank you very much for your comments, and thank you, Hellbound, for a wonderful chat about horror. The time has flown by.
Yes.
God, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and yeah, I knew this would be good, and it, but surprisingly, it's been a genuine chat about the genre.
Yeah. If only you heard the bit before we started. I'd shout at each other.
Yeah. No, but thank you very much for joining us for this Halloween special, guys. It's, I mean, you guys, I mean, 10 years, and you've got the next couple of years ahead, obviously. Yeah. You know, I'm sure with the change in postage and Kickstarter and stuff, you'll face that. You know, there's going to be challenges for every comic creator out there.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, you'll be fine, and there'll be more. What is up? Just quickly, what is coming up soon? What can people look forward to from you guys?
Ooh, Slaughterhouse Hospital issue 1 is coming together very nicely. So we've still got Slaughterhouse Zed is like a going to be a 3-part mini series. And the second part, that's
you're becoming like the Carry On films.
Oh yeah. Hospital is a direct sequel, so picks up exactly where the first one.
Oh. Yeah, Slaughterhouse Planet, which is in space, will be the last one.
What about Slaughterhouse Up the Khyber? I'm looking forward to that. That's
we've got a new Mandy the Monster Hunter anthology, which is getting close to being completed. And I suppose we've just released technically our Shock Value Legacy. It's just not many people have seen it other than online because we haven't taken it to a Comic Con yet, and that's always
So where can people find all this, all the news and information? If people want to find out more about your books and stuff, where should they go?
We're active on Twitter at Hellbound Media. We have a website which is hellboundmedia.co.uk, which has, our books and store on, and we're on Facebook as well, would you believe it, as Hellbound Media.
What a shocker.
Yeah.
we're everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. Like pod people. There's another terrifying
idea.
Except
Instagram, because we haven't worked it out yet.
Yeah.
Well, now I've got Instagram.
He's an influencer.
Just vague.
Yeah.
OnlyFans, I don't know.
Bad for us.
We always have one OnlyFans joke every show.
Every week. Every week.
The guys are going to stick around for the rest of the show and recommend you a couple of books for you to check out as well. But we've got, before we get to the shout outs, we've got another little extra to give you people now. So we might as well just, his name has been brought up already, but Tony, take it away.
Yeah, so I did a little catch up with Pat about Spacewalk, which I know me and Vince are involved in, and has come out very well, and it's about to hit a print version. So we had a little bit of chat about that, and at the end of it, it's Pat and Lisa Mills actually. Lisa does quite a lot of chatting as well. It's good to finally get it properly on the podcast, and she gives a bit of advice to first time small press people and talks about how to publicise your book and how to get it printed and all that sort of thing. And it's quite interesting. But as always, Pat is interesting. So. Here you go. Here's me, Pat, and Lisa earlier today. Do not adjust your reality. It's already been warped. There you go. I wrote that down. That's a good little byline. I'm here with Pat and Lisa Mills. Look at that. Lisa.
Hello.
On camera. What's happening?
Hi.
Finally agreed to be interviewed. Very excited. I think we've had you say like a one line, I think, in a previous interview. Good. Hey, you guys. You good?
Yeah, we're just looking forward to the paper edition of Space Warp, which will be with the distributors this coming Monday.
Well, that's ruined my second question. I'll cross that one out. That's good. Right. So I want just a couple of quick questions about the digital version, because whilst I know, Pat, you aren't a newcomer to digital, all your 2000 AD stuff, for example, lots of stuff you've done has come out in digital. I know that you have commented on it being a guided view comic and how interesting you found that. Is that something new to you both, I think, is it? Something you haven't experienced before?
Yeah, well, I think there's something very addictive about guided view. And I think some digital comics are just the PDF and you just scroll through it. Yeah. And I think we found the guided view version of Space Warp. I found it worked really well for me.
Absolutely. I mean, we you asked if it was new to us. No, because we have it on Requiem, because
Night
is out on, and it's actually, you know, it was Comixology who does the processing to create the guided view. Although there's actually a Kindle comics creator software that comics creators can feed their art into, usually in PDF, and then you can really easily create your own guided view. The only problem is it's proprietary, so it's only outputs files that can be uploaded to Kindle to be published there. Right. You can't.
I get you.
It's not like EPUB.
Yeah. I just wondered whether. Sorry, Lise, go on. Sorry, mate.
I was going to say, we really enjoyed it on Requiem. It works really, really well because there's so much detail in Olivier's art. But it's the same with Spacewarp, that because the artists have put so much in, that there's something about the guided view that takes you into that individual panel that I just think it works really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, you've got detailed backgrounds, for example, on Jurassic Punks.
Yeah, so you're holding up a page of Jurassic Punks. It's great, man, isn't it? Talk about lovely detail. Yeah,
a lot going on in there, yeah.
That's looking good, isn't it? Look at it.
Full copy, yay! It's what everyone wanted.
So it's the sort of American magazine size, is it? Is it a bit bigger than 2000 AD?
It's 8.5 by 12 inches. So that's, I don't know, is it a little bit wider?
I would say it's approximately the size of the original 2000 AD. And that's what I wanted to get back to.
Right, okay. Just so slightly wider.
I guess so. And of course, the other thing is it's...
perfect bound.
Glossy cover and all that kind of thing. So it's a nice presentation. But you see, as you doubtless know, I'm fairly negative towards the American comic book size.
Yeah.
And I think for British comics, I think we really associate with this size. And I was always a bit disappointed when 2000 AD changed to some kind of American proportions. I think, I don't know, back in the 90s or something.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, how we see British comics. And you know, that's really what Spacewarp's about.
It also bridges that gap with bande dessinée as well, doesn't it? It's got that feel to it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really fell in love with bande dessinée very shortly after bringing out 2000 AD and thought, this is how I would like my stories to appear. Rather than this cut down American format, so this is the way we really want to go.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about the French Belgian model of bringing a book out, you know, almost annually, maybe slightly more. And I think I can see us going there. I think it's a great way to have a nice shelf full of great books, which I think Spacewalk would fit well into. Yeah, how did you find the response, Pat? Sorry, go man.
Yeah, I was going to say absolutely that I think that there are likely to be long gaps in between each issue of Spacewalk because it is akin, not so much an annual but or a graphic novel, but the stories need to continue. So I see it rather like television series. You know, you have a season of a particular drama. And then maybe 8 months or a year later, you have the next season and so on.
And I think also we put a lot of work into building the website because we knew that there would be a gap, practically speaking, in between volume one and volume two. And so we wanted to put stuff up online so that people didn't just sort of come to the end of reading it and go, oh, well, that's it. There's nothing else I can do now. You know, you can go to the website and there's bonus material up there, spacewalkcomic.com, plus fantastic 6-page comic strip, Future Schlock Brandy.
From Mr. Cumber.
Your mate Cliff. So if you sign up to our newsletter, you get that story as a free download. And there's bonus material on all of the stories on that website as well. So we kind of wanted to give that extra value and make it a little more immersive.
And the opportunity for readers in the fullness of time to interact with a comic. So all the foundations are there, and it may take a few months for that really to be harvested.
And of course, that's the other thing, that from our point of view, we're only just now really marketing the comic, because up until the time the digital version came out, we all our attention was on making sure there were no last minute errors and that kind of thing. And then once that came out, then we had to process the paper version. So our marketing has really begun this week, I think.
Yeah, I know we talked about this way back in, I'm going to say February, when we came over and saw you. And you were talking about the next phase, because you had it very sectioned out, the next phase being marketing. And that's something I wanted to ask you a little bit about. So one of the bylines on this is it's a Space Warper comic for everyone. Now, I know you were keen to get back to that aesthetic of comics are for people to read who are just Joe Public and not, well, not just Joe Public, but who are Joe Public and not just collectors.
Absolutely.
You know.
Very important. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wondered what the, I know you've passed it around and you've carefully studied what the reactions have been. Has there been any surprising reactions to it or pleasing reactions?
Actually, I think it's pretty much gone how I guessed it would go.
Right.
I mean, I think there are still potential surprises, but what we felt initially was that there would be some readers who would buy the digital version, and they would always be in a minority. Certainly in the UK, compared to the paper version. So now I think it's very much selling to a kind of comic fans who some of whom will have kids and so on, and encourage their kids to read it. But it's probably good. Only in the new year that we're really going to focus on. How we reach that lost youth market. Because, you know, fans who've got kids, yeah, of course they're going to say, hey, check Space Warp out.
Yeah.
But it's all those kids who've given up on comics, including...
Oh, your parents gave up. So yeah. how do you actually reach the kids without the parents buying it for them? So that's the whole thing that we're going to be looking at.
And significant, well, I say significantly, I'm not sure it is significant, but... I throw it in for what it's worth. We had a competition where we deliberately asked for reviewers of the comic who were under 17.
Yeah.
And we had reviews from a 16-year-old girl, was it a 12-year-old boy? A
13-year-old boy, Kai, and an 8-year-old.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And it was really interesting.
We had some others as well, but they were the winners.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
It was great to read their reviews because, you know, they're barely aware of the comic scene or anything. So they're consuming this with very much fresh eyes.
Yeah.
And it was all very positive. I don't think there was anything really negative to take away from it, apart from one instance, which I always quote. Just really because it's slightly sillier. What was it? She said, Paris said something like that there was one of the stories she didn't like because it was a little bit confusing, I think she said, like her dad's old comics.
We'll take that.
And I thought,
yeah,
I bet we can all think of what her dad's old comics have got, you know, certain issues of 2000 AD, perhaps, you know, that kind of thing. But that really, I mean, that's very anecdotal evidence. And okay, I'm building an awful lot on just three reviews, but I found that very encouraging. And it did suggest to me that we're on the right track, in particular by making Space Warp, I think generally, visually more accessible, I think, than certain phases of 2000 AD, shall we say, and other comics. So I think we're in the right direction. I think what will happen, though, this is a guess, is that as we gather more younger readers, we're going to get more opinions coming in. And I think we're going to start to see, you know, the stories that are perhaps the front runners and the other stories that perhaps are not.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, it's a level playing field,
okay,
which is great. Because I personally, I don't like this idea when 2000 AD came out, to a degree it was Mac 1 and the rest, and then it became Judge Dredd and the rest.
Right.
Primarily because it encourages complacency. It means, hey, we've got this great hit with Judge Dredd, so we can sit on our asses and not worry too much about the other stories. And that did definitely happen.
Okay.
Should we just say the important stuff, that the print is available for $9.99?
Yeah, so we're going to do that. So don't worry, we've got a couple of minutes yet at least. But yeah, no, that's... before that, I was going to ask you a quick question. Now, we'll have a lot of people who will be listening to this and possibly watching the video when that gets posted as well, who are new to publishing. So I know that kind of that's your end of the game. That's your bag, isn't it? Is getting it out digitally and then getting it out in print. Is there any little things that you learned going along that would be of use to people who are sort of setting off on that road? Because you've corralled a lot of cats there, mate, haven't you? Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of things, there's a lot of working parts, a lot of artists, at least one difficult writer. Not you, Pat. The
was that guy George?
That's him. So how did you find it? Is there any little bits of advice or little bits of gold you could think of?
I think being very, very clear in your guidelines, if you're working with an artist, to be very specific about the actual technical specifications, because we had, I think, every single artist in some way
screwed up,
fluffed it slightly,
just a bit,
in terms of the page proportions,
and the DPI,
and just various things, just sort of like. Getting even some of them were coming in slightly askew, so you know, it's like, can we make this straight again? Some of them were too narrow and tall, and I think every single artist made a mistake,
right?
And so getting that straight at the beginning saves you a lot of time, because a lot of them had to go back and do something to their art to make it fit the page that we were using.
Right.
Now, if you're doing digital only, that's not really so much a problem. There, you're making sure that you do have the right resolution for digital. But it's a lot more forgiving in terms of, you know, how much white space is around it. So I think that was really interesting, because we were working with people they're fairly new, but they weren't all starting from scratch. They weren't, you know.
I think you're all working with a lot of people who are taking, on all due respect to them, because I don't think there's a poor bit of art in the whole thing. I think you're working with a lot of people who are taking that next step up in regards to submitting. You know, a lot of them will have just done their own work, maybe, or worked with much smaller publishers or people who weren't perhaps into the industry. But there's people who are stepping up. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's possibly people who had done stuff, but they'd done it the way they wanted, and they'd drawn on the page sizes they wanted, and what they were having to do was follow more of a brief there. And so I think that was quite an eye opener for me, because I just thought, well, we tell everybody once in an email that this is the page size and this is what it needs to be, and that's all you need to do. But you have to kind of be really, really on it.
Yeah.
And I took my eye off the ball a few times, and so I didn't pick up on some errors when I should have. So that wasted a little bit of time.
It's fair to say we actually lost a fair bit of time. I think collectively, you know, we probably lost up to 3 weeks. Somewhere down the line, because when an error like that comes up at the last minute, you've got to pull everything apart.
But they are all teething problems. So, you know, come volume two, I don't think we're going to have any of those.
You've got a bit of a saucy designer on board as well, haven't you, to help out?
Yes, Vince Hunt was absolutely brilliant. And Vince, together Vince and I sort of designed this, but of course he actually made...
I love that so much. That's one of my favourite bits of design I've seen this year, because it's current but evocative of the past as well. So you get both out of it.
It's so dense. There's so much going on in there, you know. Tell
Tony how long it took for you and I to put this together.
I'd say it took us about 2 weeks to come
2 weeks.
Up
to... Right. This was 2 weeks' work for us.
Choosing images and the fonts, and there's all sorts of things going on there, isn't there?
Layout, wording.
We had a test, you see. We said, it's got to be as good as the original 2000 AD advert, which was by the brilliant Doug Church, who came up with it, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
And so we put whatever we came up with, and we think, it's not quite as good. Now, what would Doug do here? And this process, we got addicted to it. I think it was well worth it because it really, as you say, it has a lot of energy behind it. And then once we'd done that, then it went to Vince and we went through a further process with him.
I mean, Vince is probably far too polite to say what it was really like. But I think
he's not saying to me. He's only said it was lovely to work with you. That's all he said. Yeah, I have to say. Yeah.
He really came through for us. So we're eternally grateful to him. That's and he
that's
was
enough of being nice to him. We can't be... That's enough being nice to Vince. I don't think we should do it too long.
Subject of production, a footnote to what Lisa's saying there, because it's starting to come up now a little bit in questions and so on. Our publishing model is based on print on demand.
Yep.
And as you know, the majority of indie comics are often Kickstarter. And so we would bang the drum for any prospective newcomer.
Yeah.
Look at print on demand. And as evidence, if you look at the various indie novelists, they're all using print on demand.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, hardly any are going in for Kickstarter.
I think a lot of people see Kickstarter now as a promotional tool as opposed to a sales tool, maybe.
I think there's some truth in that. But what we found was that the energy that we would have had to have put into a Kickstarter, we might as well go down the print-on-demand road instead.
Yeah.
Cool. I think Kickstarter, you know, some of them are done really well, but I think a few people fall into the mistake of thinking that it's a pretty easy thing to do. You just put something up on Kickstarter and it kind of promotes itself. But of course, more and more people are doing that, so you have to be able to stand out.
Yeah, it's a busy field at the moment, especially since lockdown, Lise. It's just, there's so much going up there.
I've noticed more and more in the last few months, So, you know, how do you make your voice heard there?
Yeah.
And I think for us, you know, we decided we didn't want that itself, a Kickstarter project, to be the job.
Yeah,
and we wanted to, and not also be responsible for mailing stuff out either, and we just wanted to, you know, have someone else fulfill the orders. So that's why, I mean, obviously people have issues with Amazon, but it's a great
model. All buy from them though. I know, do you know what I mean? Yeah, I agree.
Great model for independent publishers.
Yeah.
But of course now we are also using Get My Comics for distribution as well.
And we're also, of course, doing these book plates.
Yeah, so let's get into this. So we can let's wind up a little bit with how we get it. So you've got a lovely, for those that can't see, you've got a lovely book plate. So have you got a Behave one there as well, Pat? Did you just see in your other hand?
Yeah, so these ones are...
Be Pure.
Be Pure, yes.
Probably sort of generic ones, because we're also selling Be Pure, Be Vigilant, Behave.
As well at the same time, I get you.
Get My Comics, so we're decided to, because we can't do the signed books anymore, we've decided to sell it with these book plates. Yeah. So,
which are quite cool in themselves. You often see them in, I know Gosh always puts them in the bag at the front because it's quite a selling point, and they are lovely little things.
Yeah.
And I think you're you personalising some? Is that right?
Yeah. There's a kind of two-tier system, I think, really to sort of cover our costs and also get my comics. There's a little bit of a markup.
So there's a signed one and then there's a personal dedication one of the Spacewalk ones. And that all that information's up on getmycomics.com/Millsverse, I think.
That's where I ordered mine from. Yeah, that's where I went.
It's supposed to go, yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah, so the tiers are just the comic, the signed book plate, the personalised comic with the comic, and so there's that three tiers, is that right? Yeah.
That's right, yeah. So we've just decided with Adrian at Get My Comics to extend it for a bit more. We were going to end the personalised book plates this weekend, but we decided, actually it's so near to Christmas, let's keep it running for another couple of weeks, and it gives people a chance, if they want to order it for Christmas,
That
we can get those in, because otherwise it was stopping it and then maybe starting it for Christmas. We realised in terms of the turnaround of signing and sending back and everything, we might run out of time. Yeah. So I think we're going to run it till about the 7th or something.
Okay. Yeah. So have you had any ridiculous requests? Has anyone asked for Barry Cheeseman or anything?
Yeah,
like
I haven't asked you actually. Have you signed any crazy ones?
Oh yeah. There's quite a few ludicrous ones. I think there was one saying. That
I should bequeath all my creative goods to him, worldly goods to him or something. Yeah. And of course, the other thing they're doing, and I shouldn't really be saying this because it will only encourage them and get my comics will be a little bit pissed off.
This isn't going out till after that.
They use it also as a message board. So, you know, you get the sort of dedication, and then over to one side, there's comments, and you've got this whole other conversation going. Okay. Yeah.
I have to have an extra tier there for very long dedication. I'll charge another quid for that, I think.
So when are the books flying out the door? When do people expect to get them on their mat and stuff like that?
Well, I know that they've shipped to get my comics, and they are arriving on Monday. So I assume Adrian's going to be turning them around fairly quickly.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully they'll be out the door in another day or two, because it's obviously got to bundle them up.
So this
the end of next Saturday, I would have assumed.
Some of them will be going out. I think people might get them by next weekend if all goes smoothly.
Real.
And in a similar way on Amazon, it should go up on Amazon probably Monday or Tuesday. Is that right?
Yeah, it's in review at the moment, so it's just for the cogs to turn over there. Yeah, Monday probably at the latest. Actually, it'll be live.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think the thing is as well, this podcast might not go out until after then, but I take it you're still signing book plates all the way through? You'll still do it as a thing, or is it just a limited time?
I think the personalised ones we're going to end probably around the 7th of November.
Right.
But you'll probably have... I think we're just going to do a big batch of signed book plates to make them available for quite a long time.
So I can go to the site still, go to get my comics, and they'll still get them.
I think so, yeah. Because it's quite a simple thing to do, you know.
And I think now, in this age where comic book signings and conventions are problematic, I think book plates are going to become more and more important.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. It's just a nice little thing, isn't it, as well, to have.
Yeah. Well, it's a way of reaching the audience and... you know, I was, as you know, on that, Drink and Draw.
Oh, you popped down to our Drink and Draw. Yeah, that was great. Everyone loved that, man. That was so good. Yeah.
Well, you know, having been on that one and more recently on another techno system called Teams.
Yes.
I have to say, I actually preferred Zoom, I think.
Okay.
Because you see the all these little screens and things, whereas on Teams, you've just got this sort of coloured dot, you know, of representing all the different people. But I suppose what I'm driving at is, I think somewhere, maybe early in the new year, we should look at that and see if we can do a kind of virtual space warp event.
That'd be great. Where
we can interact with fans, you know, with readers, and see what they like, what they dislike. And really get a whole conversation going.
Yeah.
And I think probably to make that work well, we'd have to lure in at least some of the Space Warp artists. So it's not me rabbiting on all the whole time. And really get some debate going, because let's face it, virtual conventions is what lies ahead of us.
It does
all,
seem
really
to be the way forward. And we're talking about not to expect any till the very earliest May next year. Yeah, I can see it. And I think you're right, that Drink and Draw, when you've got like a big computer screen full of people asking you questions and stuff, it was friendly, it was personable. And I mean, we run a couple a month at the moment. In fact, there's one the night before Thought Bubble, which we're running as well, in case anyone's about. And we normally get about 40 people, maybe about that many to it now.
Wow, yeah. That's grown.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the only reason I haven't sort of... Well, we've got other things that we have to push first, but it's really... just familiarising myself with the systems, you know, the Zoom versus Teams, and also how do we do it? I mean, there has to be a top limit of people coming in, and so how do we select that? And, oh God, not another competition, please. but there's obviously got to be some way of saying, well, you know. You know, you need a manageable number of screens, don't you, really? If you've got, I don't know, presumably
I think
it's fairly...
Isn't it 100 maximum, anyway?
I think you have to have, like, a business account, don't you, for Zoom. Zoom's one of those ones. We've got a friend of ours who's got one, so he used that. Tom Curry, shout out to him. But Yeah, I think it's a bit like that. Yeah. It's not a bad system. I use Teams at work. I'm a slave to Teams, to having the little green light on. You know, that's what I use all day long at work. And sometimes when you're working on a project with a couple of people, you can have it on for a couple of hours just chatting. And it's actually nice to get a bit of personal interaction sometimes, you know. But yeah, it's not too bad. It's definitely the way forward. I think we're a bit stuffed. And I think that's where the book plates play a good point, where otherwise we'd come to a table and have a chat with you. At least you're able to sign something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's really working out what's the best way to simulate a convention. You know, how do we do that in a way that's going to be reasonably satisfying for a reader to have gone to all the hassle of signing in on Zoom or Teams, and you know, so that, you know, he comes away from it, he or she, and thinks, yeah, that was great. That was, you know,
yeah.
You know, with the way you would kind of like move along a series of desks, say at a convention, and you talk to.
Yeah. You can have different rooms on Zoom. You can go from room to room. There's got to be a way of doing it.
Give people a nice, you know, you want them to feel entertained and sort of elevated by it, you know.
Yeah.
Good. So if there's any cyber geniuses out there who are really knowledgeable,
Lisa's a cyber genius. We know this for a fact. Lisa, you are.
Me?
Yeah.
God no.
Right.
So you would be if you put your mind to it. Exactly. But Lisa's got so many other.
I got to sell books. That's what I have to do.
Yeah. So let's wrap it up a little bit there. I've got to tell you, I absolutely love Space Warp. It's densely told, but there's action throughout. There's no pages of talking heads. We get right to it, and the design and the storytelling is very imaginative, and it really brings back to those days of great science fiction, you know, the likes of Heavy Metal and 2000 AD and that sort of thing, that just really sparked something for me when I was certainly a kid, and hopefully that will translate over. Lise, where can we get them from? Where's the place to get them from?
Okay, so you can get it digitally from Comixology and from Amazon Kindle. And from next week, you'll be able to get it from Amazon, the print edition, and from getmycomics.com. But also, you can go into your local bookshop or comic shop if it's open and order it.
Yeah.
And it will be on the catalogue ordering system as well. And that goes for around the world. So, you know, you're in America or Australia, you can get your shop to order Space Warp for you. That will be available. I think actually that ordering bit is probably going to be available from about a week's time. But,
okay, cool. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yep.
And a note to that, apart from Get My Comics, who of course are supplying comic shops in turn throughout the UK, we're also supplying ourselves, I think, Forbidden Planet and...
Forbidden Planet and Forbidden Planet International will also be actually having it in stock. We're just setting up a deal with those two now.
So that will probably be, again, as a rough guess, maybe 10 days from now.
Something like that.
If all
hopefully.
Goes well.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Good stuff.
So it should be on the shelves there, yeah.
I've double dipped. I suspect a lot of people will be double dipping on this as well. So get a digital. If you've got a digital, get a print copy. You got to do it. What happens to your computer if your computer breaks? What's going to happen? You need a print copy, don't you? Good. All right, guys. Cheers for that. And hopefully I actually see you in person soon if we live through this. But yeah.
Yeah.
Good. See you soon.
Thanks, Tony.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
There you go. A little bit of a Halloween treat.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't trick you
Space,
on this show.
Get on it. Get on Space Warp. Yeah, and we're very complimentary about Vince on it as well. So there you go.
Hey. Someone's got to be. Hey. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, get on it. Of course, there will be links in the show notes, so check out all of that. And whatever you've heard so far in the show, we've talked about a lot of different comics, artists and everything already, and we're going to talk about it a bit more. But there's another couple of shout-outs, because ring that bell, let loose the dogs of war, because Kickstarter just got a new book added to it. Didn't it, Dan?
It did indeed, yeah. Viper, Crime Has a New Enemy. It's up on Kickstarter now, ready to back. There's several tiers. There's a not safe for work one with a saucy pinup. There's tons on there. Yeah. It's the current goal is if it gets to 1,500, I've got two covers, and basically readers will get the choice to decide which cover they want to go for. So that's what we're aiming for next. Nice. It's going really well. I'm kind of blown away. It's
Deck sells, baby.
It does indeed.
Yeah.
The fact that this is done.
You're already at like, what, 75% this Sunday night?
Yeah.
And this campaign's running until end of Thought Bubble weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully sort of like tell people about it over the Thought Bubble weekend and it finishes on the Tuesday morning.
You've been very humble and modest in terms of like being online about it so far, Dan. I haven't, mind you, I haven't been on Twitter much. Has he been annoying anyone?
No, I'll tell you what, man, it's a well thought out campaign. Yeah. I've got to say. Yeah,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, you did everything I think you needed to get the buzz going. And then when you launched, everyone knew about it. And yeah, no, it's good.
Plus your video's fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, that's I've shown that to a couple of people, mate. That's really good. Yeah. I reckon you'll get a few messages from people asking you to help them out with their videos from now on.
Yeah.
Obviously for payment, only for payment.
Yeah. It's good to kind of like just get people kind of jazzed up for it and excited.
Yeah.
It's so good. T1 trick I used is like find a Reddit subreddit that's got similar taste and then go for that, because I saw Dave Cook who was doing Killtopia. He was putting stuff in the Cyberpunk subreddit and the Outrun subreddit, and they were getting great like 1,000+ likes and comments, and it's a great way to kind of promote your stuff. And so I did that with Viper, and that did really well too. So
always a place to go. People forget to go to it, don't they, Reddit? But
yeah
it's got, it gets a lot of there's a lot of stuff on there, isn't there?
Loads of stuff. Yeah.
And yeah, so check out the link in the show notes. So we'll just follow Dan on Twitter. So
the pinned tweet.
Yeah.
Or we'll put it in the show notes,
Viper,
I guess.
Viper is very awesome and well worth your time. Do we Thank have you. Any other shout outs, gents?
I do.
Oh, yeah. Dan. Bring in the thunder. Go on.
Yeah, I was going to shout out to another podcast, Damien Edmondson, Art92 Horror, the Art of Horror Comics.
Yeah,
which is live now. You can go and check it out. See what he's got to say and his guest. I'm not sure who the guest is.
He just messaged me. We talk about dogs because he just got himself a dog, so we often have a chat. Yeah, and funny enough, he came up in a podcast I was in this week as well. So I'm in the Mega City Book Club podcast with Eamon Clark, who's a pal of ours and a listener. Hello, Eamon. And we were talking about Rock the God. So I did Rock of the Reds before, and now we're doing the sequel, Rock the God, which is really good. And in that, I think Damien's done a pin-up for that book as well.
So, fantastic.
Yeah, good stuff.
Lots of great podcasts and stuff to listen to.
And one shout-out for Kickstarter. You know, the United, Johnny Cannon.
Ah, yes.
Yes, fantastic. That's absolutely crushing it as well on the goal. United, welcome to the shit show. Complete comic collection of the psychedelic noir superhero comic. It's a massive hardback.
He showed us on the Drink and Draw, didn't he? It's a fucking lovely book. And he's got a load of art pledges as well. You get a really cheap piece of art off him, which will be really good. Yeah.
I've got that for myself. And when it turns out, I'm going to wrap it and save it to myself for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
That's going to be my little gift.
Yeah. I've got a couple of Kickstarters as well. So there's Puno, a Peruvian cyberpunk comic from Gustavo.
Oh, Bugs. Yes, I bet that. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Me too. I was chatting to Gustavo about that this week. And The Gunrunner from Side Z as well, which is I think came out this week as well, which is another book from Side Z, who's always a reliable and thoughtful writer, which is a good little sort of chase thriller thing he's done. Yeah. And also Stonewood Mountains, Volume 1, Lost in the Woods, from a future guest of ours. It could do with a little help. It's only at 10%. It's got about a month to go, but go and look at that one. It's got a really interesting art style as well, which is well worth a look.
Yes. Oh, fantastic.
Blimey, I'm drowning in fucking show notes. My page, the notes.
I've been sending to you on the link.
Yeah.
So hopefully you got them.
Yeah. Be fine. We'll be fine. Because now it's time to recommend some comics to lovely people. And as always, the guests go first. And I know they've got a couple of interesting ones lined up. So you can fight amongst yourselves who would like to recommend a book first. So over to Hellbound Media.
Shall I go first?
Yeah, go first.
Okay. What has become my only monthly comic recently is Money Shot, which I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by Tim Seeley and Sarah Beattie.
Yeah.
And I used to follow Sarah Beattie on Twitter because most of her tweets are either calling Trump supporters or...
a lot about her boobs as well.
Telling people how amazing her boobs are, which, to be fair, they are.
Yeah. That sounds good.
And then on one random tweet, she said, like, here's this comic I've written, and it's coming out, and I'm now up to issue 8 or 9, and it's really good. It's about...
I'm a couple of issues behind on this, so it's good to know it's still going strong.
It's about, basically, scientists that can't get any funding for their space exploration missions, so they decide to go to space and film porn with various aliens that they meet to fund...
the dream of a mission.
It is. And although it's kind of porn, it's quite light and it's fun. The characters are really kind of well defined, and it's just a good read. And I enjoy it. And it's got tits in it. And my other one is a comic called 13 by C. Bedford. She brought out the first issue last year, I think, which had just 13 pages, and the second issue is just out now. I think she's just sending them out, and it's just so good. I don't know if anyone's seen her artwork, but it's kind of, I want to say, next level shit. It's like you could see it like in a exhibition on Renaissance art. It's that good, and right. I'm lucky enough to be working with her on a secret project, but it's amazing. So,
I just googled right now and found her website, which I'll put in the show notes. And before you click on, you've got to confirm that you're old enough.
Shit. 13 is basically about a witch that's been confined to hell, and she's now the plaything of a succubus. And the first issue is pretty much them just fucking, but I think it's going to develop on from there. But,
You sold it already to me.
Nice. And the art does look really great.
Miss those movies like Witchboard, don't you? We need them back again.
Witchboard.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, it's a classic, mate. I think there's 5 of them. Yeah.
There's sort of the witchcraft series, of which there's about 15.
Yeah, there's them as well. Yeah, they're good. Yeah.
God. Mark, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
Well, I can only take the tone up, I think, on this book. First of all, I'm going to say for the indie side of things, for this time of year, reading Our Final Halloween by... Mike Riley. And that's really good, you know. It kind of got that nice kind of 80s vibe. The colour palette of it is one of my favourite things. It's done really bold kind of splashes of colour in each location. It's a different colour, but it's, you know, group of 5 young people wake up in the house, no memory, blood covered in blood, you know, satanic objects and writing all around them. Where do we go from here? And it just escalates, and it's fabulous.
Escalates from there, just imagine that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the starting point.
Yeah.
Where most horror ends, this begins.
Yeah, yeah.
And my other one is actually because I've heard talk of manga many a time on the show recently. It's going to be Full Metal Alchemist. And so Viz are putting out these gorgeous hardback books of the manga. And I've never seen manga with this paper quality before. You know, it's actually...
Oh, wow.
Really nice. You can actually, you don't see through the pages as you're looking through it, like some older ones. But it's got all the colour pages in colour, because manga's obviously black and white, but the original printing there, they occasionally have colour pages, so it's got all the colour pages behind the scenes. It's really nicely presented. So Full Metal Alchemist has a kind of horror side to it, because it's kind of alternative world, where instead of science, alchemy has been the thing. So everyone uses like rituals and circles to like create things. And these two were young kids who were quite gifted in alchemy, and their mother dies, and they get in their heads that they can use alchemy to bring her back. So they do this circle, they get all the ingredients of a human body, you know, they measure out how much, when I say that, I mean literally the chemical content, create a circle and try to resurrect their dead mother, which just creates this weird mal-shaped and deformed abomination. One of them loses his body, ripped off into some, it's quite eldritch in its way. He loses his body entirely and his soul gets melded to a suit of armor. The other one loses an arm and a leg, and then it's just about their kind of journey of trying to restore the younger brother, who's a massive suit of armor, back to his body, and
and it's sort of and trying to find the Philosopher's Stone as a way of getting their abilities. But it's a finite story. It doesn't go on forever. I think there's going to be like 18 volumes for the whole thing. And it just sort of becomes this ongoing saga. It's kind of dark fantasy, yeah, humor.
It's one of the bigger mix. Names of this sort of stuff that, you know, I've always been aware of that one, but never.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah.
It's really nicely drawn. And the art, I really like the style. It's got a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And if anyone wants to dip their toes into manga, I highly recommend Full Metal Alchemist as good starting point.
Entry point, yeah.
Chat, man.
Yeah, nice.
Nice.
Okay, who wants to go next?
Go on, V, you go.
All right, okay. I've had this book for a couple of weeks now, and I wanted to wait until the Halloween episode to talk about it. This is the final book in the Realm of the Damned trilogy. Realm of the Damned.
You've been sharing panels with us all week of this.
Yep. by one of my favourite artists, Piper. And written by Alec Worley. Just want to make sure. Yeah, Alec
Worley. Very busy 2008 writer, and he does a lot for them.
Yeah. Yep, I think that, and this is it's a match made in heaven. This Pi does art, colours, and lettering, put out by Werewolf Press, which I think is those guys just putting it together. And it's a one and done sort of graphic novel. I've talked about, I think, both volumes, volume one and volume two. The first time I got volume one was all the way back in the 2000 AD 40th.
When I
got my t-shirt and stuff, yeah. I got a free book with it, and it's a book that I actually wanted to read for a while, and then I was just hooked. And the sequel to it was kind of like a little bit of a prequel leading up to the first book, and the third one, it's all like proper, you know, brutal horror, metal as fuck, sort of vampiric lords, demonic monsters, you know, the world, as it always says, like the world is fucked and the monsters are sort of taking over. There's no one left to protect us, you know, the monsters are taking over. But the third book picks up a bit after the first book, where this is basically an apocalyptic over the top horror thing. Now it's almost like someone made a Mad Max film and decided to make it like a proper full on 100%, just put your foot down to the floor like horror as well. Nice. Action horror. Basically, as it says on the back of the book, the vampire demigod Balor has been destroyed along with his scheming sister Athena. The new congregation has fallen, but the world has fallen with it. In striving to fill the power gap left by the vampires, other monstrous factions have fought each other to a standstill, destroying the very world they sought to conquer. The earth now lies in ruins, truly a realm of the damned. Ooh. And you're following a guy called Alberic Van Helsing. Who had a bit of he definitely had a strong arc in the first sort of book. He's now the leader, the very much the Mad Max of the tale, as he's just traveling this world and just destroying monsters. But this is a world that, you know, all hope is lost. You know, everyone, humanity is fucked because the monsters have taken over. And everyone's just meat now, and there's hideous monsters. It starts off, and I know Pi said on his social media that he said something along the lines of, "Oh, you should pick up this book because I had fun doing the first 25 pages, which is a car chase involving a bunch of werewolves." And I was like, "Right, okay." I was going to buy it anyway, but fuck me, and it very much is proper full on. You know, armored cars sort of driving through destroyed cities as the main characters being chased by sort of mutant werewolf creatures and gore ensues and action. I did, like we just said, I've been seeing pictures of this book and then just taking a picture of that spread, sending it on to the the lads on the WhatsApp group, because I'm like, you got to see this. This is insane. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful book. It is. It's not for the faint of heart. And if you like your brutal violence, it's done with a real sort of strong sepia grey tone. which I love about it. Black and white, grey tone, but then lots and lots of red.
Yeah, that works really well. That grey and red thing, that works really well. Yeah.
Which also works with when they bring in another thing, like if someone's looking at a screen and it's all the greens and yellows of an LED screen, which really pop from the screen as well. Just such a wonderfully sort of produced and completed sort of package that books like this may go underneath a lot of people's radar. But you should definitely get these books, people. You can get them on Amazon or like go to the creators and find it direct from them, because it is not for, you know, this isn't an all ages book. There is swear words aplenty, there is gore aplenty, there's brutal action, there is monsters that come out of your nightmares, because there's huge in this one. There are creatures that are like as big as a skyscraper, but they're made out of like an abomination's made out of flesh, that like creatures that have just been merged together, and there's like undulating sacks of like you know, containing human bodies just hanging down from these creatures.
Like Pat Butcher. Is that like Pat Butcher?
It's basically Pat Butcher come to life. I mean, to be honest, I just wanted to use the word undulating sacks. I haven't said that on the show before.
There's one left on a fence in Slaughterhouse Farm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But there's even great, like, in the chaos, like, there's this mad, like, there's also, like, supernatural magic and stuff happening, and there's witches and arcane rituals and stuff. One particular highlight I liked was there was a headless, there was a motorcycle being driven by a headless person. And the sidecar to the motorcycle was filled with heads. All the heads were talking, but whenever this headless person launched a head at something, they were grenades. And if they hit something, they explode. So there's lots of heads just screaming, "Come on, do it!" Ha 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 ha! And then but the heads are bombs. It's insanity, this book, and I absolutely love. I mean, it's there's dark character. There's a bleakness. Dan, you love bleakness. This book is non-more bleak in a lot of ways as well. Don't get too attached to a lot of characters, because when they go, they're not going to go pleasantly. Mm-hmm. But like I say, I think you can read this by itself, I think, because of the nature of how it's jumped forward to this apocalyptic world. Certainly when I opened it, I was like, whoa, we're here, are we? This is different to the previous two books, but it is worth like sort of dipping your toe into the world so you get a feel for it, and just seeing how the guys sort of develop this story. I like it as well, because even though it's a trilogy of books, the first one was like a modern day sort of horror story where ancient creatures came back and they had to deal with them. The second book was almost the medieval horror, and the third one is the post-apocalyptic horror. So they've taken on three sort of genres in itself through telling this story as well.
Yeah.
And this one is the, you know, as we love to say in comics, you couldn't do this anywhere else but in comics, what they do in this.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the beauty of comics. There's also some really, I mean, seeing how Pye's artwork's come on, before we start recording, I did send them another picture of a brilliant panel maneuver he does, which I may post up in the Facebook group, actually, so people can say.
That's a good shout.
Yeah. Because there's a wonderful use of colours and stuff. But yeah, the Realm of the Damned trilogy, I will recommend the whole trilogy, but the new one is Realm of the Damned Terra Aeternum, because they all have Latin subtitles, which, you know, is classy, isn't it? But I believe Pye's got it, Intestinauts coming out through 2000 AD soon.
Sounds great.
I know, yeah. I think it's about like robots that live in people's intestines, but don't quote me on that. I don't know if that's written by Alec, but definitely Werewolf Press. Check them out. You can go to realmofthedamned.co.uk. You can tell it was metal as fuck, because when it came out, it was Metal Hammer magazine. We covered it quite a lot. And you can go to Facebook.
Is that still going? Yeah.
I think it is. Facebook.com/werewolfpress, Facebook.com/realmofthedamned. I got this on Amazon, shame on me. But I'd love to see what these guys. I think this story's done. The way this story ends is the final part, which is quite nice. But yeah, they've put out three original sort of graphic novels, shall we say, one and done. They are separated into chapters. I don't know where... It feels like they might have been comics originally, but... But no, definitely check this out. Can't recommend it enough. I love it. I'm just... And also, it's a book I'm just going to keep coming back to just to look at, which says a lot. So that's mine.
Yeah, the art style on that book really appeals to me.
Yeah, mate. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got an underground feel to it as well. There's a little bit of the sort of Lord Horror 80s, just people just going nuts. Really,
yeah. I mean, it builds up towards the end. Like, it goes full on, like, people covered in blood, and at some point, like, human bodies are being merged together to create an even bigger monster. Do you know what I mean? We were talking a bit about, like, society and things like that, you know, that horrible body horror. This is this is full
on. Or as Mark likes to call it, a Thursday night.
That sounds right up my street.
A chilled Thursday night.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Actually, I haven't gone over the undulating yet, to be honest.
Oh, still going. All about the undulating sacks. That's what we're all about on this show. Yeah. Speaking of which, who's next to wrap?
D, do you want to do yours? Is there an easy way to transfer to your one from that? Is there, or
absolutely not? It's gonna be like a fucking car crash. Screech on the road. I'm reviewing shouting out Victory Point by Owen D. Pomeroy from Avery Hill. Yeah, I've read this book a couple of times this week, and I like it, but I'm still on the fence about it. I need to kind of think about it more. Essentially, it covers the story of a lady called Ellen who travels home to her childhood home in Victory Point. You've reviewed this book already, haven't you, Tony?
I think we did it when William Hazel was on the show, and we sort of shared some images of it, didn't we, to talk about the facial work he was doing.
And the Victory Point is a town is kind of like set up as kind of an idealized refuge, is kind of like for astronomers and thinkers of the age and scholars, and it never really took off, and kind of it's not been dilapidated, but it's kind of not what it was. And this young girl, young woman, returns back. And it's like a kind of snatch of a couple of days out of this character's life. And you see her come back and interact with some people there, with the tourists and her father. And it acts as kind of like a springboard for her to move on with her life. The artwork, like you mentioned before, Tony, the faces and all the bodies and everything's drawn relatively realistically, but the faces are like two dots, a line, and then like a little dot for the nose.
Yeah, and it's a weird style, isn't it?
I'm not sure if it really gels, because there's one moment where she goes swimming and she comes out and there's like a full body shot of her naked on the beach, and it's just like just a naked woman, but then she's got this kind of abstract two dots and a line on her face, and it's like was this the choice to do this, or
I'm guessing it was. I know his previous work looks a little bit like that. Yeah, British Ice and Between the Billboards and stuff. He uses a similar style.
It's I find some of the facial emotions, like sometimes they're a bit unreadable. A bit unscrutable. That's a good word.
Yeah,
I can't scrute them. I don't know what's going on with their faces. But the art style otherwise, like the I think Aaron is a architecture.
He is, yeah, he's an architect, yeah, and he knows what he's doing when he, because it's almost like an Italian style seaside town, isn't it? There's a lot of white you know, white painted concrete and stuff. It looks very striking, doesn't it?
It's amazing. Yeah, it feels just like a real place. It's really really interesting. I mean, the city, the town itself, Victory Point, is a character in the book. It sort of looms large. Yeah. It's an interesting book. I'm going to have to read it again to kind of see what I think about it. It did affect me, but I'm still trying to work out what that effect was.
It's weird, isn't it? We've had this quite a lot with books. And I won't name them all, but we've had ones where we've discussed it between us and it's kind of changed our reading experience recently. Definitely. Between the three of us. As has happened a few with the three or four guests recently. Yeah, it's interesting, is it?
Definitely happened with Breakwater.
Yeah,
it did. And
last week's book as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, through talking about it, I got more out of it because I could explore the themes and the ideas more. And whereas this is the one reading. Yeah, interesting. I guess that's why they set up book groups, book reading groups.
Yeah. It lives beyond the page, isn't it?
Definitely.
Interesting point. Yeah. Good. Nice one. Shall I do mine?
Yes.
On. Okay, so this one, I'm going to start with a quote which comes from page one. There's just a black page with a quote in the middle of it, and it says, Charles Bukowski said, "The problem with the world is that the intelligent people are full of doubts whilst the stupid ones are full of confidence." And that's a great quote, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that applies to the small press as much as anywhere else, let's face it. And it's this is The Scumbag. It's the hotness this week, this book out of Image, isn't it? It's the world's fate rests with the worst person on it. And I've decided the main character of this, Ernie Ray Clementine, may be my new favourite comic character. I'll actually hazard a guess and say he's, you know, we often say, when was the last truly iconic comic character created? And people say, what about Lobo? Or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Seems to go back. I think The Scumbag is going to be one. I genuinely do. And it's also a book which I will describe a scene to you later, and you'll think this is straight out of a Tribute Press book as well, which is obviously made more of an enjoyable reading experience to me. It's written by Rick Remender. Art by Louis LaRosa. Now, the art team changes per issue. I know later on we're going to get an Eric Powell book, which I think will suit this as well. I know we're fans of Eric Powell.
Yeah.
Colours by Marino D'Anicio. Letters by Russ Wooten. Edited by Will Dennis, the ever-reliable Will Dennis from his Vertigo days onwards. Is a great editor. It's the incentive variant covers by, get this, Gio Lotto, Yannick Paquette, Andrew Robertson, Jerome Opina. So there's some class acts involved in this one. I think you were telling me, V, it's Remender's biggest selling Image book so far, isn't it?
Yeah, he's mentioned that this has been his biggest hit ever.
Yeah,
which is
good to see.
When you see like the stuff he's put out through Image as well, just think.
Yeah, that's had like TV deals and all sorts, isn't it? Yeah. It's the Louis LaRosa cover is the one that I've got at the moment. I probably would like to buy the Andrew Robinson one. I think he's a really great artist, especially on covers. And in the central character, Ernie, is this absolute just dreg of a bloke. And reflected in his aviator sunglasses that he wears are two mushroom clouds of the world ending. And he turns out he's the one who's designed to stop this apocalyptic event happening. But honestly, looking at him, he's a fucking disaster himself. I don't know whether he can carry it off. It's a complete accident that he becomes part of it. So the first half of the book is set in a bar. So it's in one of those really awful bars that you don't, you know, the sort of bar you go into in a city, you know, a council estate city centre type place, and you walk in, everyone stares at you. It's that sort of bar, you know, you're just going to get glass soon you walk in. It's that sort of place. And it's full of punks and bikers and wise guys and heroin dealers and prostitutes and all that sort of thing. But striding through the middle of it is, like he thinks he owns the place, is Ernie. And the design on Ernie is just genius. He's, I suppose, Steve Buscemi with a bandana and a moustache.
Nice.
Aviators wearing a waistcoat, like a denim waistcoat, and bare-chested underneath. On the denim waistcoat are loads of badges and stuff, but one of them's like a German Iron Cross. You know, it's just, he thinks he's that person, but he's just the epitome of the sort of hippie-era heroin addict, you know? He knows pretty much everyone in there. There's a dealer in there called Spanish Larry, who Ernie keeps saying he's a friend of mine, but and Spanish Larry just keeps saying, no, I can't stand you. And it turns out that Spanish Larry is the man he gets the heroin from. He bumps into a couple of prostitutes, and Ernie's even got an annoying catchphrase, which is "Party forever and never let the good times end." And I think he's going to say that a lot throughout it. But it's just full of shit ass characters. There's a couple of hookers. He grabs hold of one of them, and he suggests her downstairs area smells and she needs some penicillin. It's just the whole of this scene is just built up to show what a completely and utterly disgusting character is. He ends up stealing a load of money from because he hasn't got enough money to buy heroin from Spanish Larry. So he ends up stealing, there's like a Red Cross collection tin. So he steals that off the bar and pays him in single dollars and quarters and stuff like that. But he's all the while he's complaining about how he's got diarrhea. and he's got a bit sort of doubled up with pain. He tries to go home, but there's a load of police tape, like a police, you know, crime scene tape, taping his door closed so he can't get into his home. And then the next scene is probably my favourite scene in it, and this is the one I wanted to describe to you. So it's a series of four horizontal panels, and it starts off with him and his, you know, his close up on his face, and he's got all the works out, and he's burning the heroin on the spoon, ready to, you know, pull it into the needle and that sort of thing. Pulls out a bit more, he's still cooking it up. Pulls out a bit more, still cooking it up. And he's actually got the final one, he's got his arse out, and he's shitting himself, spraying poo out of his bum.
I literally, as you started talking about this, I bought it on Comixology.
Oh, good.
And I was just having a quick flick through the pages, and I came to that, and I thought, is that happening?
He's doing all this, and you get this whole page of like, oh, he's shitting himself. Oh, no. And then the next page, it turns out he's not outside his flat in the hallway. He's just in the street. And there's a load of women like going, what are you doing? And he just doesn't care because he's just completely rutter scumbag. So there's a bit of a, it turns into a bit of a sci-fi kung fu spy drama thing going on after that. And he accidentally... something happens to him. I won't spoil it all for you, but something happens to him and he has to become the hero. He has to save the world. And there's this sort of holographic cyber ghost character who turns up and says to him, you've got to save the world. This is how it's you. You accidentally did this. And now it means you've got to be the hero. And he says, well, no, I'm not really interested. And he eventually sort of negotiates where he's going to get $3,000. But one of the things, I won't spoil everything he wants, but one of the things he wants is one of them sex dolls that can talk. And that's part of his deal, along with a flying car. And they're going, yeah, whatever, just get on with it, get on with it. You know what I mean? And suddenly you've just got this utterly classic character. I just want to read onwards, who is the ultimate anti-hero. He's just the most unpleasant. I think Remender's just gone to make the worst person he can. I mean, if you think the dude from The Big Lebowski is a fucking loser, this geezer's, you've got nothing on this geezer. Yeah. Just
but then that creates the interesting thing of the layer... Remender's characters have layers and layers and layers, and dare we say it, where is going to be the redemption or the arc for this character is going to be supremely interesting because of the setup that we've already got.
Yeah, but because you've set him up, you've made him this fully realised character. You know, you've had him speaking to people. He owes money to the wise guys who are sort of telling him. He had this interaction with the prostitutes. He's trying to do heroin whilst doing a shit in the street. But suddenly you're thinking, I want this geezer to succeed. He's now my hero. I want him to, I'm thinking about buying a bandana and wearing aviators tomorrow. That's how far I'm going to go with it, shaving it down to a handlebar. I love a handlebar moustache. So it's also got in it kung fu, it's got hard drugs, and it's got hookers. So it's completely up my street. It's like comics heaven. And it's out this week from Image Comics. So look for it. I've downloaded a copy, but I've got a hard copy coming in the post.
The artwork's absolutely stunning.
LaRosa, man, look at that detail. You feel that bar, don't you? You feel the dirty... And he draws a packed bar full of people. It's just spot on. We've all seen that bloke in a bar and avoided him, haven't we? We've all been into that bar. Or a gig or something. Some of us have gone home with that guy. Do you know what I mean? That's how it's gone.
Coming soon, kung fu cocaine hookers, anyone?
Don't give him ideas. So there you go. What a murderous row of comics to recommend to you lovely people. And every one of them you should go out and get. And you should get all the books from Hellbound Media. Thank you very much for joining us this week. It's been proper fun.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
Top stuff. And hopefully in the future, we will be harassing each other from either side of a convention table again. That's the dream.
That's how it normally works. You steal stuff off Vince's table. Yeah, and he doesn't like it.
I slash your tires.
It's all in good fun.
All in good fun.
It's all fun and games until someone gets a pig's head.
Unfortunately, there's a problem with the post, so you won't get yours for a little bit. Yes, we hope you, lovely people out there, enjoyed this week's horrific episode, which was most scary of all, quite highbrow. In certain parts.
Yeah, we're all right.
But that's what
we did mention the ball on the fence. So.
But the thing is, you guys know your horror, and it's not all about the guts and the scares.
If you're in a political debate and someone says, "Oh, I'm a bit on the fence about that," that's not what it means.
Although in modern politics, it possibly should.
Yeah, it could well
probably,
be.
Probably is.
If not worse.
But if there's anything you want us to talk about on future shows, or if there's any events or any horror books that you want us to talk about or cover in the future, let us know. There's several ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be retweeting, announcing guests, and just generally having fun. The other two have the keys to the car, so anything can happen on that Twitter feed. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And also, if you're on Facebook, then please join the group Awesome Comics Talk, or one word, search for it, and apply, because there's a wonderful community of people there that are just talking about making comics, classic comics, art. There's art threads. There's no hard selling. It's just people for the love of comics that just want to talk about things, or maybe get advice on, if you're making a comic and you want advice, thought out advice from a community of people, then Awesome Comics Talk is the place to go. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about all these fantastic comics that some people may not have heard about. And that's a horrific thought, isn't it? We're also on things like Amazon and Spotify. Gore, that's legit, isn't it? As well as networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Larson's Jizz Fountain.
Savage Dragon, aggressive jizz.
The best comic out there.
And yes, and there's lots more comics to come in the future from us, folks. Thank you very much for listening. Where can people find us on Twitter? Tony, etc. Not just Twitter. Other are available.
Tributepress.bigcartel.com for all our not-safe-for-work comics needs. Yeah,
there you go.
Herc 3 is in the bag. It's almost just about to start the colouring phase, so we're almost there.
Nice. Well, you don't mess about, do you?
No.
Dan, where can you find you and your lovely Kickstarter?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can see the last double page spread of Vanguard issue 18 going up this week.
Oh wow.
I've not done a double page spread in fucking years, and it's looking good. Yeah, man. Yeah. And you can back Viper on Kickstarter now.
Yeah, go and do it.
There you go. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo, where there'll be doodles, pictures of cats, and God knows what else. Thank you to the Hellbound Media guys. Once again, where can people find you and your lovely work?
Facebook at Hellbound Media, or Twitter at Hellbound Media. Instagram, search for Hellbound Media, or indeed hellboundmedia.co.uk. So should be easy enough to remember.
You'll
forget them all.
Got a brand game strong there.
Yeah. Brand game is strong. See? Should be. They've been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah. 10 years next month.
Yeah. Blimey. Yeah, there you go. Need to have a celebration.
Cake.
Yeah. that was brilliant, because everything just went quiet apart from cake.
Yeah. Every good answer to your question.
Yeah. Everything stops for cake, even the show. So we're going to go have some now. Thank you for listening, everyone. Wherever you are in the world, we hope you're healthy and just enjoying yourselves and reading comics, and just you're okay, because we love you, don't we? Don't we?
Hell yeah. No, I don't.
Well, Tony loves nothing.
I'm on the fence.
Oh my word, what an image.
I'm torn on the fence.
Oh, God.
Oh, you're talking bollocks now.
Now.
God. Yes. So have a brilliant Halloween. We hope you watch loads of cool, scary movies and whatever you're going to do. I've already got a list of movies that I'm going to line up. I'm going to go classic Universal Monster. I've got a box set that I'm just going to...
Well, I got the Tremors Blu-ray box set.
Have you seen the documentary, The Making of Tremors?
I've seen some of it. It's on YouTube. I watched a little bit the other day. Yeah.
Just makes you want to watch that film. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, they've sort of cancelled Halloween. We've got loads of sweets, so it's all fucking roses to me.
Yeah, one of the bucket of piss I've got.
Yeah. We're just going to have to drink it again.
Have a bath.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway, eat loads of sweets. Enjoy your Halloween, watch some scary movies, read some brilliant horror comics. Thank you for listening. And from Dan, Tony, Mark, Matt and myself, of course, we haven't had this many guests in a while.
Yeah.
Have a spooktacular week. Yes, I did it again. And as always, what do they do, guys?
Say awesome.
Say awesome.
Say awesome.
Oh, is that the best?
Cake.
that, your internet may explode at some point, won't it?
Possibly.
Oh, God, why is that?
No, it's actually my
too much porn.
There's no such thing as too much porn.
Hey! Hey. I started meaning to go on.
Yeah.
I hope we got that in the bag, Vince.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. If you need, you know, online comics, a whole host of them, that's where you go, isn't it?
We haven't look. We're not doing. We haven't started yet.
God. That for a bit.
See, yeah, that he's trying to steal my job.
Yeah. Oh God, I knew these kids would be trouble, Vince.
Matt, have you got the squeaky pig ready?
Oh, sleepy pig sleeping.
Oh, God. Oh, is that what we call it, is it?
I mean, that's the most terrifying thing I've heard in quite some time.
Look at it. Squeeze it. What are you going to recommend, guys? You know.
Yeah, I've probably got a few.
I got a couple.
Oh, they're mainly porn comics. But...
Yeah, they're fine. Just one will do.
Just one.
And we usually let you go first.
Really so, graphic porn comic.
One and done.
Yeah. That's how it goes for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Move your hand up and down just a bit.
Back to the squeaky
one
pig.
One of the bum.
It sounds better when occasionally when Dan's internet slows down, it sounds a bit like he's having a stroke. When he did that there, it was added sexuality to it.
It's really lingered on the word bum. Start the show, yeah, so let's just get going.
Okay. Right, game faces, everyone.
No. Stop it.
The starch made of jizz.
Oh, damn, I can't use that as your name this week. I'll save that.
I don't even know if we can lower the tone.
I'm not sure there is a tone.
No, there's no tone.